Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 31st final day of Blagest.
Blagest.
We're going to be talking about Bleach, our thoughts on it as a whole. Y-Rot here, Rolo T here, and our special guest, Tekking 101 here, also to talk about... Yes, Chris, yes, he's over there.
Great butt stick!
No.
Well, thanks.
Wait, what are you doing in my
thanks
room?
Thanks for having me. It's a sad day, Nick. Sad day, Chris.
Well, I guess the sad day was like a week and a half ago.
Well, I put out my Bleach review today, the last one. It took me 2 weeks. I just couldn't handle it. I just had to drag that out. I had to milk that as much as it was worth.
You had to solemnly embrace every last Kuzai scene that you could.
Yeah, Kazui.
It doesn't matter. He's never showing up again.
No, he's going to get his own spin-off series, Nick. I guarantee it.
Not until Bleach in the White Winter.
It's going to be called Clorox. I think that's the tentative title. But yeah, I did like a whole like epic trailer for the final review, and everyone's commenting like, "Yeah, you're milking this as long as you fucking can, aren't you?" And I'm like, "Well." I've been talking about it for 5 years. I'm sorry, guys.
That was your specialization for a really long time. What else are you expected to do? Yeah.
Really? Yeah, really. Yeah. Just, you know, here's the teaser for the trailer for the final review.
I'm really glad that, like, we haven't oriented the podcast around one particular series. You know, one thing ends and we're just like, okay, we'll do a special recognition of it and then we move on. Because can you imagine, like, if we just start up an episode like, oh, guys, it's the end of manga. The medium as a whole.
It's all done.
I'm fortunate that at this point I think I amassed a decent fan base where I could start something new and at least have a decent following from that initially. I think I'll be okay.
So,
or maybe I'll be living outside of a 7-Eleven in 5 years being like, Rukia! Rukia!
You don't beg for money, you just shout
I used to review Bleach on the internet!
Now I do it here!
And I'm just talking
this
to a...
This tastes pretty good!
And I'm just talking to like a dumpster the entire time.
Hey, don't you talk about Chad that way.
He's a boxer. You kind of respect
you know,
him.
Because I was a big fan of Chad's journey, how he was like a professional boxer, you know. Oh no, I'm thinking of Hajime no Ippo. Sorry. Mixing up my series.
We're actually big fans of Chad here, but we were just like, what the fuck?
It doesn't make sense.
It completely contradicts his character. And
also considering the fact that, I mean, he's not one of the strongest characters in the series by far, but compared to a normal human, he might as well be fucking Saitama. Like, one punch would be enough to end the fight, really.
Yeah, I was like, does he not incorporate any of his spirit power, kind of? I'm assuming he doesn't turn his arm into, like, the left fist of the devil and just murders dude.
And there is Yasutaro's special technique where his arm rips through his boxing glove.
I don't know,
he has murdered 17 men in the ring.
He's the, hey, you do not become the heavyweight champion without, you know, causing some bloodshed. I watched the Rocky series, I know how this is done.
This El Directo has killed two men.
Chad versus Ivan Drago.
Oh, man, that'd be so boring. Neither of them would talk or anything.
Exactly.
Unless you bring in really good bread, then Chad would have to comment on that.
unless you get him talking about Ichigo, in which case he makes a very inaccurate comment that he doesn't believe in.
I don't know how you feel about the Bount arc, but there's a scene... Right. It's okay. I think it's the best filler arc, but there was this one scene where him and Noba, that turtle, are just, like, sitting in his room, and they're just not saying
just
anything.
Just not talking to each other.
They're just like, eh.
Right, because each of them had, like, their own mod soul that they partnered up with for that arc, and they got partnered up. Yeah, they're still a character. Yeah.
And for the anime, they tried to incorporate those mod souls in the Roncar for a while, and then they just kind of dropped off the radar, and you just never hear from them again.
So, okay, you guys can distract the Grand Fisher a little bit, but not anymore. Go away.
Yeah. Now Ishin shows up, and okay, it's time to get back to the manga material.
Anyway. I'm not sure exactly how we're actually going to talk about this. Because I have a lot of lingering thoughts about the arc that we just got done reading. but I guess the purpose of this conversation is more to talk about our feelings of the series as a whole.
And ultimately, whether we'd recommend it.
Ooh.
I think that, I don't know, maybe should we talk about the last bit and then talk about the series as a whole, and then you had to branch out from there? What do you think?
I think kind of just starting off with the beginning, or starting off, I think I have an idea how this conversation's going to go, so I think it might be best to kind of start off on what got us into Bleach.
All right, and sure.
Particularly okay. The stuff we liked.
Okay. I'll start off, seeing as how I've been reading it for longer than you two.
Indeed.
When did you start reading it?
2005 or 6.
Yeah, I was at 7.
I think I might be before you then.
I don't know.
I was collecting the English Tonka Bombs.
I think it was chapter 200 in Japan was when I was around the time I started.
See, I started off with the English volumes, so whenever those first came out.
I think that was 05.
He's like, I don't know when you old motherfuckers started reading that series.
No, 04. 04 for the English, I think. Yeah.
So we were around the same time. You might have been earlier, though. You might be right. The way that I got into it was, my friends and I were crazy into Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm still into Yu-Gi-Oh! But not quite as much as I was back then. Like, literally, the first time that I actually interacted with people online was because I had joined, like, a little Yu-Gi-Oh! Dueling club where we would duel each other over Instant Messenger. And, of course, the very first time I did that, or joined a group that did that, of course, there were people who cheated because, of course, they were... Yeah,
a true Exodia! God, of course you have. 7 games in a row.
It looks like Obelisk the Tormentor! Yeah.
Yeah, I had another Karibo in my hand. Yeah. So, we did that, but from joining that group, two guys became my really close friends. Their names are Jacob and Paul, and we basically started reading each other's Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan fiction that we had been writing. And we made our own little group where we would talk about our ideas and stuff, and that went on for years. But about 2 years into it was when the GX anime, the Yu-Gi-Oh! GX anime was going on, and one of them referred me to this site where they had actually managed to get the raw broadcast and then cut out the commercials, and they put the video file online.
Huh.
And through that same website, that was how I ended up watching Bleach, was because they would rotate out what shows they hosted on there, and they only held on to like each episode for a week before moving on to the next one.
Yeah,
but they happened to have started off, they happened to, at the time it was being referred to it, have put the second episode of Bleach on there, and it was subbed. And so that was how I started watching Bleach, because they were like, oh, you should check this out. I'm already a fan of it. And so I started watching it, got really into it. I watched basically the entire anime up to that point, and then I was like, well, I want more. So I started reading the manga, and that is the first time I ever read manga. Well, maybe not. I think that I had, like, some of the old Pokemon comics, but, you know, the first time I was, like, loyally following a manga series was that. And I've been following it ever since. I think that I'm at the point now where I've spent more of that time hating Bleach than liking it. Which is weird because it was such a long time for both. Because, you know, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Or a little bit more.
I mean, it really goes to the point of talking about Bleach that, you know, I think essentially as long as we've been doing the show, Weekly Manga Recap, Bleach has been on the downswing for us. I mean, I think we started doing the show essentially right after the Aizen arc. I think we came in during the Fullbringer arc.
Mm-hmm.
So we never really hit any high point in Bleach, really.
Well, we had moments.
There was no
point where we had a real sense of, like, optimism about the series.
But I think even more so, we didn't ever get to talk about it when it was in those high points. So, you know, doing this podcast for 5 years... we've generally had a negative impression of Bleach or a disappointing impression or something in the lesser end of the spectrum of opinions. And we it may be easy to forget that there was a very long time that Bleach was running that people really enjoyed it, that I think all of us enjoyed it. So it's sort of an interesting thing where, you know, if you look in the window of what this podcast has given us, you really wouldn't think it's a good manga at all. But I think all of us can easily say there are great moments in Bleach and moments that we love in Bleach. Tekken probably more than any of us, but...
Yeah, I mean that's odd that you've been doing this for 5 years, because that's the same time I've been reviewing it. Except my show is completely dedicated to it, so I don't know if it's just like... I felt like there were a few high points for me, like the moment in the Fullbringer arc where he got his powers back. That was like a really big one there that everyone was freaking out over. A few moments in the final arc, but nothing on like the same level as you had with like the Soul Society arc and, you know, Ichigo going Bankai for the first time or anything like that. Yeah. I want me to tell you how I got into it?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so I was obviously way younger than either of you. I was 2007, so I would have been 13.
Sweet summer child.
Oh, the summer of 2007 was magical, and that's really where this story goes. So I was, I just turned 14, and I was in the summer of 07, I was really into an online RPG called RuneScape. And my daily routine was basically like wake up at 3 in the afternoon, play RuneScape until 3 in the morning, and then go to bed, and then repeat that for 3 months. And while I was doing that, I was watching TV also, because I had shitty dial-up internet, so my, you know, RuneScape would crap out all the time, so I'd, like, have my TV, and I was the ultimate, like prioritizing my nerdiness. Like, okay, you know, the internet died for 10 minutes, I'm gonna go grab some pizza rolls, come back, get ready to go mine some ore or whatever. Turn my head watching TV.
You had the life, or what some people would call hell.
I was 14. I didn't really have a lot of shit going on in my life. I live in a boring town. Anyway...
before high school.
Yeah, pretty much. This was right before I started high school. One night I was up watching Adult Swim. I used to watch this like Family Guy and Futurama on there. And then Bleach comes on, and it just, stroke of luck, happened to be the first episode. Like, they cycled back to the first episode, so I just started watching that. I started recording it, and I'm like, I got really into it. I got really into the show. I started my freshman year. I met, like, two or three other people that were really into it, my friend Quentin, my friend Sydney, and we talk about it. And, I can't think of any moment, like, I was already reading the Naruto manga at this point. I got introduced to manga around, like, when I was, like, 12 from the Shonen Jump magazine. And, honestly, the first manga I ever read was Yu-Gi-Oh!, the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Where Bakura, like, traps Yugi and his friends in that, like, RPG world, and they're, like, the little figurines. Yeah. That was my first manga I ever read. So I was aware of manga at that point. So, I started buying the manga at that point around freshman year. I used to bring them to school and read them. And, pretty much up to that point. I remember there was a few times where I was reading manga in, like, my computer classes, and my teachers were like, "Are you allowed to be reading that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I guess. It's nothing bad, I suppose." And they're like, "Oh, okay, then." So, and there we go. And then right after I was done with high school, I started reviewing it, like, the week after I graduated.
Moved on to bigger, better things. You're like, "Fuck you, high school! I'm gonna be a manga reviewer on the internet! I'll prove you wrong for picking on me!"
I had no idea I was gonna... I had no idea what I wanted to be when I graduated. I was like, "Screw you, I'm going to community college, I guess." I don't know what I was wanting to do. But, you know, by the time I was done community college, I had a decent fan base at that point, a few thousand subscribers, and I'm like, maybe I'll try to make this my thing. And, so.
Very cool.
College is ending for me again very shortly for the final time, so I should probably come to a career decision at some point in the near future.
Nah, that's fine.
Professional Bleach reviewer. You already have it. You'll just continue to review Bleach chapters that already happened.
Thinking about maybe doing that, like picking like the all-star chapters that everyone loves and going back and reviewing those, maybe. I don't know. But I'll put that on my resume whenever I'm applying for my next job. I'll be like, "Professional Bleach reviewer."
If someone's like, "So what, you drink bleach and tell people how it tastes?" You're like, "No, but that's another one to keep in mind."
Yeah.
I started with Bleach. It wasn't my first manga by any means. I think I started reading with Yu-Gi-Oh! That was the first I ever read. Then I basically started purchasing Beat the Vandal Buster. But I believe Bleach was the first series I started purchasing after that, so it was very early on to my reading.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Influenced all of us to read Bleach.
Yeah.
This is
pretty
great.
Pretty much. This is great, yeah.
And it was one of the first series I really got into. When I first started reading manga, it's something I wish I could capture again, but there was that joy, particularly because I didn't come into it when Bleach first started. There were like 7 or 8 volumes out of Bleach by the time I started picking up. So it was that joy in finishing a volume and immediately being like, I need to get back to the bookstore. I need to get back to the bookstore so I can pick up the next volume and I continue the story. Like, I don't have that so much anymore, but it was a cool moment, especially when I was going through like the first 6, 7, 8 volumes of Bleach, which is where, personally, like where my high point of the series is those very early volumes, even before the Soul Society. So that was where I really started to dig in and get into it. And, you know, then you had the Soul Society, and that's where you really kind of met more people who knew about Bleach. You could see, like, oh, hey, that dude's avatar icon is, you know, Byakuya. I'm going to be a Bleach fan. Or you just meet people. It was so much more synonymous to talk about with people because the Soul Society, I think, kind of opened it up to a whole new kind of grouping of individuals.
Bleach was the shit back in, like, 08 for me in high school. Bleach and Death Note were, like, the two things that a fair amount of my friends actually watched and talked about. So it was fun. It wasn't, like a nerdy, obscure thing.
Yeah, I think, is it Super Eyewolf who recently just did a video called The Fall
yes,
of Bleach?
Yes, yes, yes.
And, yeah. And in that, he made a point that I hadn't considered before, but I think it actually has a lot of truth to it, how Bleach probably got a little bit as popular as it did because it was a series that did feel more mature than a lot of its contemporaries because a lot of the characters looked older. They looked like teenagers. And I think because of that, it was easier to get older kids in high school, things like that, to get invested in it and to jump into it because it did feel a little bit more mature than, you know, some of
also,
your other series.
I don't believe Bleach... No, I know for a fact Bleach didn't. I know Naruto and One Piece and a few other anime did. They had their runs on, like, Cartoon Network and, like, Toonami first, and they had to be censored to a degree. And Bleach just... No, it was immediately an Adult Swim, so maybe that's why, like, right out of the gate, oh, man, this is more mature. This is TV-14.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It continued to build to that perception that it was an adult-esque series that you could watch it and you could hold on the same line of, like, Afro Samurai or Cowboy Bebop or any other adult, you know, anime. It just it fit into that same genre.
Oh yeah, Bleach and Afro Samurai. Yeah, they're on the same.
I think they're a lot fucking closer than Bleach and Cowboy Bebop are.
Yeah,
practically the same.
The giant cock cannon robot.
You're thinking that couldn't show up.
What are you talking about? That shit happens in Bleach all the time, man.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about Afro Samurai and how absurd it got at times.
I haven't seen it in years, but yeah, it's... Last time I saw it, I remember thinking it was pretty cool, but now that I'm thinking back, I'm like, damn, yeah.
It's exploitation as hell. It's so great.
Yeah. It's like Gurren Lagann, you know? You rewatch Gurren Lagann, and I'm like, whoa, what?
At least Gurren Lagann, that was the point of it.
Yeah. That was kind of like it was absurdity, but, you know, it still goes crazy places.
But before we get too far away from it, yeah, so I'm not really sure. God, it's been so long that I don't actually really know what drew me into Bleach. I honestly could not tell you. I couldn't tell you what I liked about it that drew me into it. I think it might have just been the fact that this is going to be that standard thing that people throw out in order to criticize it, but I think it might have just been, it's like, oh, it's Dragon Ball Z with swords. You know, it had that same style of presentation in combat, but they were, you know, these samurai fighting with magic swords, and that was cool. And Kubo has gone on record occasionally as saying that he thinks that one of the appeals of the series is that it just looks cool.
Yeah.
It does. I'll give him that.
I think a part of it came down to the fact that it was extremely well-executed shonen battle manga. It never did anything particularly unique beyond its atmosphere and kind of visual style. It had that kind of urban style mixed in with a very unique appearance. But it's not as though...
Yeah, but Kubo's style is a little bit more... It's certainly different. Like, I can see similarities between, like, Naruto and One Piece. Bleach has its kind of own separate feel to it.
Yeah, but, like, it's not as though what actually was given to us was anything crazy. I mean, we've seen plenty of stories about ghost-related powers. We've seen plenty of stories that start off on the Monster of the Week. I mean, you can kind of almost be like, just combine Yu Yu Hakusho and Sailor Moon. You essentially get the first 6 volumes of Bleach. But that said, all of it was well-executed. They put really good characters in there. they put really entertaining moments. And this is something that in my rereads, I forgot. Kubo gets a lot of crap for not being a good writer. I know he said before that he sometimes doesn't feel like he's a very good writer. He sometimes just enjoys characters more. But I really had to appreciate how well he made his characters heroic in those first chapters. Because everybody has an endearing moment that really establishes themselves and makes them appealing. And I mean everybody. Like, it's not just Ichigo and Rukia. Yeah. Chad
or Hime.
Ryu. Kon gets a big moment.
Don Kanoji.
All of them have moments where they show off their true character. It's all very earnest. And it's all really appealing. Like, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm invested in this guy all over again. I forgot Kon had a moment where he's like, no, I'm not going to let you crush these ants or this virtual character because all life is precious. And I was almost losing. And you're like, oh, shit, this dude's awesome.
I'm going to be the punchline character.
Now I'm going to get really muscular and it's hilarious.
Oh, a projector comes out of my head, and it's funny because my Yuri is trying to turn it off by gouging
my
eyes.
And I just kind of show up, and then I go away, and then I show up, and then I go away.
I go with Ichigo and Renji to the Zero Squad, and I just fawn over how hot the Asauchi are. Not the Zanpakuto spirits.
The Zanpakuto spirits.
And then I go away up until Ichigo falls off a cliff, and then I grow big after Hime catches them, and then I go away again.
Yeah, that doesn't make any fucking sense. It's like, oh, I was hiding in your Shihakusho the whole time. Oh, now I'm big and I cushioned your fall. Okay, where are you now? Like, that was all flashback, and then you come back to the present, and Ichigo's like, so it was Kone then. All right, well, let's go back up there.
And he literally never shows up again.
I know!
We'll never know what happened to him. After.
I forgot to put him in the list. I had a big list in the review of, like, everybody that didn't show up in this chapter.
And I saw the list going up, and I was like, this isn't going nearly fast enough.
I had to stretch it out for the joke. Oh.
So, I mean, that's for what it was for me. It was well executed. It was really enjoyable. And going into the Soul Society, I think that's where a lot of people started to really get into it. You know, you mentioned in your review, Nick, that's where it's the most popular. And most people will probably say it's where they liked it the most. That's where I started to lose it a little bit, although I still realize there are a lot of really great moments and stuff like that. But the Soul Society kind of opened it up into this huge area with all these new characters, and I think almost everybody found something within the new introductions to, like, latch onto.
And I don't even think Kubo planned... Well, I know he didn't plan that at first, because he even came out and said, like, when I started the series, the whole thing with the captains, and that wasn't even... I didn't have no idea what that was yet. So he came up with that, it's, I guess, halfway through the substitute arc. He figured out, oh, I guess this is going somewhere, so I'm going to, you know, create a new area or something.
There's a lot I think he said he didn't plan. Like, I thought also the Aizen twist wasn't something he had planned originally. Like, he just was going to have Aizen get killed, and then he's like, actually...
Maybe.
He could be behind it all.
I can make him one of the best shonen villains ever.
Yeah.
Okay, I could try to make him one.
I can make him one of the best shonen villains ever for Act 1.
Now it's time for him to go One-Winged Angel and stop being smart.
It's astonishing how...
I don't have to think anymore because I'm God. Fuck you.
Oh, yeah, but that makes sense. Yeah, but it makes him way less interesting. But it makes sense! No.
Grumble.
Something that, because I'm watching the chat as we talk about this.
Yeah.
But one person brought up that one of the things that really got them into the series was the music. And I have to admit that, yeah, looking back, that was probably a big thing for me. At the time, like, when I was, you know, up until I was around 13 or 14, I, like, didn't listen to music. It just wasn't something that I did.
I was the same way up until, even after high school.
Linkin Park got me into it.
Panic at the Disco for me.
But for a time, Linkin Park was literally like the only thing that I listened to. I was such an incredibly stereotypical 12-year-old nerd of the time. It was ridiculous. And then as that series was coming out, my friends were introducing me to more music. So it was essentially Linkin Park, the bands that they introduced me to, and then Bleach soundtrack. So I listened to probably only like 5 different things at the time, and like 30% of it was Bleach soundtrack music. And Bleach, what were they called? What were they called? The voice actor singing collection. Beach Beat Collection.
Bleach Beat Collections, yes.
Which included Renji being metal as hell, and
The Kenpachi,
a good singer.
I remember Kenpachi did the opening four, Tonight, 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 and that was a good one. Oh,
too alive. Still better than the original. Fuck that song.
It grew on me. I liked it.
Ugh.
I know. This is an opinion. Like, I'm the only one that has this opinion. I liked Bleach opening four. Sorry. The freaking English. I'm sorry.
But,
Yeah.
So, and then from there was how I got into other manga and anime. It was a gateway series for me. So, I think that a lot of what I... When I read Shonen Combat, I think a lot of my first impressions of it are, you know, okay, how does this... My ideas for how it should be, I guess, I should say, draw from when I watched Dragon Ball Z on Toonami, and from when I read Bleach when I was, you know, 15 or so. And everything kind of ties to that, and how it is like, when I read something new, I compare, okay, well, how does this, you know, compare to that stuff? How is it different? How does it approach things differently? If it approaches it the same way, it doesn't do it well. With, you know, like, you know, early Bleach combat is like the standard for me, you know, like the Soul Society fights and the way that and then, you know, so I compare newer Bleach to those chapters, I compare newer series to those chapters, and how they do the combat.
I liked... I mean, the combat in the first, like, six or seven volumes of Bleach is you know, simple as crap.
Well, I don't need that. I mean,
well, no, I'm just moving on to... like
most of the most of the villains are hollows, though, so it's more of just,
but it's like Ichigo has a big sword, Ryu shoots a bow, Chad punches things. It's not that complex. They get to Soul Society, that's when they introduce Shikai. And at the start, Shikais were also pretty simple, you know. Ichigo's with a sword, he could do the...
Sword get longer!
You know,
sword get longer time!
Turns into a spear, turns into like a chainsword. Again, not too crazy. And then when they first reveal Bankais, most of the early ones, again, not that crazy. Kuwamura is essentially a giant version of himself.
And Tosen's was a little bit complex. Yeah.
It wasn't too complex, though, because you could still explain it pretty simple. It creates a dome that makes all of your senses fail.
Except touch.
Yeah, except touch while you're in the dome, essentially.
Yeah.
So you can still explain it. Compare that to later on, especially in this last arc, where so many powers, not only were tough to explain, but it's also the sense of, like, the only way they got countered was if something equally or more confusing came up against it.
My favorite is... I'm Lilia, Sternriger X, I'm a god. And then now it's like, wow, it's a massive coincidence I have this sword that can only hurt gods. Weird!
Thank god I had my god-slaying sword around. Oh, god damn it. I can see why people really like the fights in Bleach. It's never been my particular favorite. I do find some of them very interesting, and there are unique battles within Bleach, although one of my issues kind of has always been, after the Soul Society particularly, we get more and more kind of complex powers, except Ichigo. Ichigo is boring as shit. He's just fast. And that doesn't even matter, because everyone else he fights against is basically as fast as he is, essentially. It never seems to play much of an advantage.
Because they made a really big deal. Like, hello.
Shit about me, Nick?
They made a really big deal when he used his Bankai about how, okay, all of the power of his Bankai just, you know, goes into his body and makes him strong and makes him absurdly fast. And then, yeah, even with the Bankai, it's like, well...
And then right after...
You can't just have him be faster than everyone. So everyone can keep up with him now.
Almost right after that, he fights Grimmjow briefly, and Grimmjow's like, it only gives you average speed.
Yeah.
That's all it does, though.
Like, yeah, well, I guess you're fucked then.
Yeah,
I can shoot this energy wave, which is black instead of white, I guess.
That's racist.
And I feel like part of that also then came into when he had an opponent, they couldn't have that interesting of an ability either. Because it wasn't like, you know, like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure has this thing where they have people with very crazy abilities, but the heroes tend to also have a crazy ability, so it becomes a lot more of like trying to find unique ways to use it. I feel like they could do this with the villains at Bleach, the side ones like Barragon, I age everything around me, or Pepe, I make people fucking fall in love and shit.
Yeah, that's a really good point. But Ichigo never really came up against opponents.
Yeah, like, no, like Okiora's just like beams and shit. Grimmjow, it was like, I get claws and that's it. When he fights Aizen, he's lost all of the sensory manipulation abilities and he's just like beams and shit.
You're right. Mm-hmm. If Ichigo fought against, like, Barragon or somebody, he would be, like, fucked. There's, like, nothing he could do there.
Yeah, and I understand somewhat of that. Like, obviously, as a writer, you're like, well, I'm not going to have him go up against the one dude he can't beat on his own. But it's just become a case of, and this is sort
Imagine how much more interesting Ichigo would be as a combatant, though, if he didn't have to do that.
Instead of,
I have to just get stronger and just get faster and just beat this guy in order to break my friend. If instead, he had to use what his relatively limited power set was to have to counter someone with a much more complex ability.
Well, that's what everybody... How's he going to fight Yuha? That's what he kept thinking, because it's like, he's not the guy you can just hit a lot and make him fall down.
And turns out, you can just hit me and I will go down.
and that's kind of the thing. Ichigo gets a bit of a stigma as being kind of a boring protagonist, and I think... His fighting style plays it. Now, I would disagree with a lot of the people who say, like, he doesn't grow, he doesn't change, he doesn't...
Oh, no, he definitely changes. He definitely changes.
He definitely does. But I do feel like it added into some of the issues of the series is that, you know, in a series with so many characters with crazy powers and unique Bankais, Ichigo is the one who kind of had the most simple and basic thing, and he fought people who did.
Ichigo does not have, unlike most shonen protagonists, he does not have, like, a solid goal. Like, you know, Luffy wants to find the One Piece, Naruto wants to become Hokage. Ichigo's main goal throughout the entire story is just, I want to protect my friends.
Yeah.
But...
I fight for my friends.
I think he says it way too goddamn much every time. Like, there was that moment, like, you know, he's fighting Ginjo, and Ginjo goes on this long spiel about how the Soul Society is messing with you, they're treating you like an object, and they're just using you as means to an end. You know, how do you feel about that? And it's like, Ichigo's clever retort to all that is just, alright, well, whatever. I'm doing this to protect my friends, basically.
Well, and
it's just like, you had a really good moment there, you could maybe go more beyond than just saying, like, the friendship route, I don't know.
Well, and more recently, well, most recently,
with
the final chapter where Yubak, you know, goes on his whole spiel like, this was my goal the whole time. It turns out I don't like the idea of reincarnation much at all. And as Chris, last week, you point out, during that whole spiel, Ichigo says nothing. We don't know what his feelings on it are, literally at all.
Yeah.
Ichigo has not commented on the fact that he has killed the god that keeps the universe and reality together. Twice in the past, like, week. He's no thoughts on it whatsoever.
Maybe that's why nobody wanted to take up the position. Like, hey, we need a third Soul King. He's like, I don't want to fucking die.
Kill me. Ichigo can kill me and say nothing the whole time? Just stare at me really creepily?
Ichigo had really nothing to say when he killed the Soul King.
He just looked really like, well, when he...
It was fun!
When he killed the first Soul King, he was just like, what? But then when he killed Yuha, he's just like... Just really determined look on his face, and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just disregard the last few chapters, because it's Kubo. It's just like, you know what, I gotta end it, so, you know, whatever. That's not gonna make any sense, and it's gonna piss a lot of people off. I really feel like Kubo just wanted to be like, okay, I had an ending planned... But I'm not gonna be able to do half of it because the way it's ending, so I'm just gonna give my characters a storybook ending. It's not gonna make a lot of sense, but it's at least ending it on a high note, I guess. Maybe that's what he thought. I don't know.
That's his high note, like dead last in the rankings.
Well, dude.
What I,
people what burning I... their volumes, I don't
know. Which may or may not be for shipping reasons, but whatever.
I really hope the Bleach fandom is not that petty. Because I was a big Ichirukiya fan as anybody, but I would never burn my manga, like, ever. Like, that's...
Well, even if you just think about it, it's like, why don't you just, like, sell it? That's like...
Yeah!
No. It's easy, like, library, fuck.
It's easy, like, you know, $700 at least.
Nah, because you put it up on Tumblr and Facebook and you get a viral sensation. I'm out $300.
Oh, yeah, it's worth it getting all those retweets.
I don't know, man.
$700 at least.
I'm sure there were people that were that legitimately is pissed off, but I don't think it was like widespread thing. I think it was just like one or two people that did it and it caught on, and that's all that really happened.
But I came to a conclusion about Kubo in the process of when we did, over the course of like the last several months, I think, from a combination of what people have been saying about him as the series winds down, from reading Zombie Powder, from going in preparation for this episode, I went back and over the last week, I reread the entire final arc again.
Wow.
Oh, God.
You have free time.
I went through it really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
But, so I did that, and I came to the conclusion that it all just comes down to what Kubo's been saying about himself the whole time, which is just that he likes drawing. He likes making character designs, he likes designing outfits, and so he prioritizes being able to draw something.
So you think he was prioritizing, like, character designs over, like, a story?
Yeah, and, well, he's said, you know, whenever he has to come up with what to do, he'll come up with a character design.
Yeah.
If he gets writer's block, he comes up with a bunch of character designs and then just figures out how to put them in the story. So, people have said for a long time, oh, you know, Bleach has so much, you know, ridiculous foreshadowing in it, you know, hundreds of chapters in advance. Like, you know, when Hiraka shows up on the first cover page. And the conclusion I've drawn from that is, Kubo just came up with a character design and had no idea what to do with him until later. That's it.
Yeah, and it's also very possible that he could have been, like, after the Soul Society arc, he's like, he went back and, like, oh, I forgot about this character design. I'll use that, I guess.
I'll have him be this character, you know?
Yeah.
It has to be the reason why he was like, 25, 26. I made 27 Stern Ritter. Fine. All right, of them's the fucking made-up letter.
Chaz, Domino.
Bleach has this expansive lore that people have documented and made fan works about. Some of it has been incorporated into these bonus books, which are semi-official now. There are these data books that contain all this information. And I think that Kubo didn't, you know, imagine a lot of this in terms of how it interconnects with each other. You know, that was like, you know, something he came up with after he just came up with the base ideas, and he was like, okay, well, this could be how that works. And that's probably, I think, how he actually came up with the story of Bleach, was he just came up with the way he wanted to draw, and then he was just like, well, I could do this with it. And that's fine. That can lead to the creation of very, you know, interesting things. A lot of authors who, you know, have to constantly be writing their manga and don't have the luxury of being able to plan everything out in advance, just kind of have to roll with stuff and hope that everything kind of falls together. That happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that I think that also Kubo suffers from the same problem that a lot of people do, which is just that he gets bored with stuff. He decides that he doesn't want to do something anymore, and so he either gets lazy when he does it because he doesn't feel passionate about it, and he's creating art. It's really hard to create art when you're not passionate about it.
Yeah.
Or he just decides not to do it, full stop. And that's why you have these characters that disappear from arcs, why you have these characters that technically stick around when he never does anything with. Or he sets things up and then doesn't follow through on them, or the final thing that they get to do doesn't seem like it justifies the amount of build-up that they have is because it didn't particularly interest him, so he wasn't invested in it, and he went off to do something else. Mm. And that tendency is the thing I concluded at when I read the last 4 years of manga is, like, if you go back, like, I was super negative on the series at the time when it was happening. You can go back and watch old episodes, and you can see
at the beginning of the final arc?
Just shitting on everything. Mm. But by comparison, that first year of the final arc is actually objectively really good, because the way that it's set up is different from all the stuff that Kubo have been doing, because it's a war. I forget the character's name, but that one, like, sub-commander in the 13th Division gives a speech to the two minor characters who never show up after the first invasion.
Ryunosuke and Shino. Yeah.
Who, by the way, have a lot of time spent building on their characters early on, and then he never does anything with them. It's weird. But the what the character says
is, it's strange.
He says, when both sides believe that they are justified in what they are doing, that is war. And that's what makes this different from anything else. You know, it's made a big deal of. And we never really learn until the very end why the Quincy's are doing what they're doing. We have the assumption of why, which is they were genocided. But
yeah, and I thought that...
That seemed like reason enough to me.
And I thought, novel concept, I thought that they would build more on what we already know about the Quincy's in the series. Like, they were genocided. Mayuri killed, like 2,000 of them or some shit. A lot of the shit, because, you know, Shinigami were the cause of that genocide, but, they were blindly following Yuha, and Yuha's will was, you know, whatever he wanted. It was like that, you know, I'm gonna kill the Soul King and do all this crazy shit.
And we get a little bit of insight on, you know, individual motivations. We get, you know, Asno's life was saved by Yubak. That's why he follows him, you know, his every whim. Askanak Lavar is just weird and kind of insane and curious about the world that Yubak would create. And then there are these half explanations of some characters, like Pernita rebelled against the Soul King because.
Because of reasons.
Yubak is the Soul King's son. Whatever that means. You know, stuff like that, where there are these, you know, brief explanations thrown out, but that's not the main point of what Kubo was doing. It was just, I want to draw shit. I want to draw this cool-looking shit that, and these ideas that I have in my head. I have these weird designs that I want to do.
I really want to draw a giant hand, so exactly. I guess we're going with that.
And all the other stuff was, you know, not as important to him. But, like, the way... Getting back to where I was with the first year of the arc, not just the way that it's set up, but also the way the Quincy's themselves are set up. They have all of these weapons that make them... Each of them stand on the tier of a captain. Every single member of the Sternritter, basically, is on the tier of a captain, supposedly. Because...
Supposedly.
Right. You know, when Kirige fights Ichigo, he is using these various Quincy bow techniques. He's absorbing all of the reishi around him in order to create this tremendous, this ridiculous form. He shows off his
Ronsu Tengai.
Right, and also the shrift that he has.
Yeah.
And Ichigo can't break out of it until it interacts with his Quincy blood. Not looters, but the other one. The other Iron Car.
I'm trying to think.
It's with an A.
Asgario Ebern or something. Ivan. I think Ivan was his, like, yeah.
He shows up and is like, well, why isn't Iron Car working with the Vandenreich? Well, other than those two, we never see anymore. They're using the medallions. And then the very next time that they fight, the medallions don't work anymore. And it's like, well, why did you set all of this up? Why did you set the medallions up if they were not going to be used very much? Why did you set, oh, we can just get more Aron Car with Haribel? Where does Haribel go? Then you've got people getting killed en masse during the first invasion. You know how many named characters get killed by Sternritter after the first invasion?
Well, Zero. we thought it was one because Izuru, but then he comes back as a zombie.
Oh, because Izuru seems to die.
Robot zombie.
Sasukibe gets killed. Yamamoto gets killed. And then after that, Unohana lets herself be killed by Soraki. Ukitake sacrifices himself so that the left arm can become one with the Soul King. Nemu kind of gets killed, but then Mayuri just makes the next one.
Yeah.
Literally no one else dies, because it looks like they're dead, but then Mayuri sticks them in a regenerative pod so that they don't have to die, even though they don't do anything else.
Yeah,
get in my pod.
You know, Oda has that, like, kind of mindset where he's like, I don't like to kill off characters, because if I kill them off, it means they won't ever have a chance to do anything else in my story. I feel like Kubo has that same thing. He's like, well, if I kill them off, they won't be able to do anything else. But then he's just never
true, but it's the final arc, so...
He's just like, yeah, but I guess they don't have anything else to do. Whatever.
Yeah, but you've said he's come out and said this is the final arc, so you think you'd be like, all right, if I'm going to kill people, now's the freaking time to do it.
Like, was there a reason to make sure Rose lived? Couldn't Master Masculine just fucking star-beamed him through the chest and that was it? It was done? He doesn't do anything else. He just
he comes back as a zombie,
out,
but
yeah,
that's
you
it.
Find out he's alive again later. It's like, couldn't you have just killed him? I don't.
I don't see why he had to.
Well, maybe he would have had. Okay, maybe he had plans for Ganju, but like, why does Grimmjow come back? He kills Asuka and Naglfar.
That's not a fight, though. That's
he doesn't
nothing.
Even talk to anybody. He doesn't
Nell
speak
shows
to
up
Ichigo.
Well, like,
oh, no,
Nell
he speaks
up,
to him, but it doesn't, like, go anywhere.
Well, he wants to, they explain, like, okay, he joins with them because he's going to get the chance to meet Ichigo again, and he wants to be able to fight him when that happens. But, oh, right. Well, he's got to go and fight the Stern Riders. Okay. Asuka and Naglfar defeats him. And then he comes back at the end of the fight with Urahara and stabs his heart out and crushes it and stabs him in the back and all that stuff and kills him. But then immediately afterwards, they're like, well, we're trapped in this death ball. What are we going to do? It's okay. I left an opening so that Nell can come in and save us.
And
well, why didn't Nell...
Thing?
Okay, but if that is literally the only thing Grimmjow's going to do, why doesn't Nell go in, kill Asuka and Naglfar, and then pick everyone up and take them out?
The craziest thing is that we don't even know how that was fucking resolved. We never
that was something that was probably, yeah. That I think was just lost from the time crunch. But
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're alive, but it's just weird that that's the last time we saw all those characters.
Actually, the thing that pisses me off most about the whole arc is actually Zaraki. Well, they established, okay, there's these five military, what are they called?
Special war powers.
Right. Ichigo is one, and that makes sense. Then you've got Urahara, who,
makes sense, I guess,
he kills one of, you know. Then you've got Aizen, makes sense. Then you've got, fucking Ichibe Hyosuke, which, by the way, fuck the Zero Division.
Don't get me started, Chris.
Fuck the Zero Division. Nick. Like, I reread that, when I was rereading that, and I was like, God, I forgot how much goddamn time is spent on these guys just so that they can get killed.
I mean, you find out what the two of them do. They just get murdered. Like, one of them's like, I'm a seamstress. I sewed your body up, and then she dies. You're like, this sucked.
Yep.
And I guess none of them actually
I should clarify. Ichibe doesn't die for some reason. Because Ichigo just says his name and he comes back and then doesn't
do
anything.
The power of words.
I said that no one else dies. I guess the other four of them may be dead? I don't know. I mean, okay, Senjimaru did have a hole blown in her head. And...
No.
It didn't
that
stop
was,
Shunsui!
To be fair, that was a clone of her. That wasn't the real her. That was like a copy.
Oh, really?
That was a copy of her.
They were all defeated.
Imaya had a hole blown through him. And then you just see them all lying defeated, like they shoot stuff and fought them, but we had no idea how that went down.
Right. So, the fifth of the five special war powers is Zaraki. And they make a huge deal of him. Shunsui goes to the Central 46 and is like, I want him to be trained in the ways of killing so that he can unlock his full potential and he can help us. And they're like, this is ridiculous! And he's like, no, this is something that has to be done. And he's like, I'll entrust you with this Yachiru Unohana. And just like, they go down they go down for their special training, and Unohana literally kills Zaraki over and over again in order for him to Saiyan up and kill her. And he does. So they sacrifice one captain, the head of their entire healing corps, who will keep them alive, in order to make Zaraki more powerful. Zaraki learns the name of his sword, and uses Nozarashi to beat Gremmy. And that is the last of the Stern Rider that he defeats.
Yeah. He reveals Bankai against Gerard, and it
we don't learn his
sufficient.
Name, which is kind of hilarious, actually.
I don't know if I like that he did Bankai, that he got a Shikai and a Bankai, like, the
it,
same arc. I don't know,
think about it. Zaraki's Bankai, Hitsugaya's true Bankai, and Byakuya's most powerful secret technique with his Bankai were not enough to take down Gerard. What the fuck was supposed to take him down?
I did a fan fiction contest for people to come right in, and the result was actually really good.
I bet you that my ear was going to show up with some other bullshit.
The version that I read that was pretty good is that Shinji uses Bankai, which, like, reverses his ability and then they just jackhammer the guy and it kills him. And that then they use Hanataro's sword to try to heal him, but it reversed it, so now healing will damage him. And then, yeah, I'm giving you an abridged version, but it was a really good fan fiction. I had like 200 entries.
Those are both good ideas. You wouldn't have had to use all three of those cool special captain moments in a fight that meant nothing because they all lost to him. Or at least
once again, it meant nothing because Yuha just decided to kill him anyways. So it's like, why couldn't you have at least had him die in a cool fashion with the all three attacks at the same time? Like, that would have been the best way to go about it. But
I mean, Shinsui shouldn't have been involved with one of them. I'm not going to say Mayuri shouldn't have been involved with one of them because they were both heavily involved in the arc up to that point. Shinsui especially more so than he had been before because of his role as the new captain commander. That's fine. Urahara fights and basically defeats one of them. Okay, well, Urahara's been in the series for a long time. That's fine. But yeah, if you're going to go through all the trouble of building Zaraki up and making him. And this is not a matter of, oh, Kubo just got bored of them, because Zaraki is one of Kubo's favorite characters. Like, he said in an interview a few years ago, he was like, I really want to do more with him. And we learned more about his story. We got to, you know, see how he knew who Yachiru was that he named Yachiru after. He finally got some resolution on his conflict with his sword. But in terms of why he did, which was to get stronger so he can help us win this war, someone else could have beaten Gremmy.
Yeah.
Like, actually, brief aside, Kubo could have done so much goddamn more with Gremmy. So much more. But I actually, while we're on the subject.
He was such an idiot. And the brain in the jar, like, why? How? What? Like, where did that even come
with
from?
With a twist!
One of the things that I did while we're on the subject of this arc is, while I was rereading it, I actually kept track of appearances, character appearances. There are 207 chapters in the final arc. I kind of want you guys to see if you can guess roughly how many the main cast shows up in. My character.
What do you mean by main
my
cast?
Character.
Right.
I mean, like, how many chapters out of 207 do you think Orihime shows up in?
20?
24?
It's actually way more than that. It's 52.
Okay. That's
you have to, keep your mind. It's appearances in each chapter, line spoken, not did something, just shows up. Like in a group shot, in a scene where they're running somewhere, that all counts. How many do you think Chad shows up in?
Orihime was, what, 52?
That's right.
I'm going to say Chad's like 48.
I'm just going to say 40.
Checking is closest is 41, because and most of that is that Chad and Orihime were together for a lot of that arc. But at the very end, Orihime goes off with Ichigo, so she shows up more. That's basically the difference. Rukia and also Renji.
Oh, so it's just one and the same?
No. Just guess both of them.
Rukia had the fight with Asnot. Does Rukia's ass being in that one chapter count?
Yes, it does.
It
looks
35.
Like a
peach. I'm gonna say
it does look like a peach.
I'm gonna say 52.
I'm gonna say 35.
And Renji.
Renji, I'd say.
I'm gonna say 40. I don't think he was in it as much as Rukia. Although he did have the mask to masculine fight.
Yeah.
I'm gonna still say 40.
I'll say 42.
He actually shows up more than Rukia.
Huh.
Yeah.
Rukia's in 46 chapters, Renji's in 57.
Okay.
So thus far, of the main cast, Renji has appeared the most.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's
about Ichigo.
Well, Renji shows up basically, you know, because he's alongside Byakuya during the first invasion.
That's right. You know,
Renji actually does a lot in this arc. He's around a lot.
He went with Ichigo to the palaces too. So
right. Yeah. Yeah, he was there during Ichigo's training with the Zero Squad. He was present for a lot of the events of the series.
Yeah.
Okay. Ichigo.
I'm going to say 70.
50.
88.
88. All right.
Too bad. You know, there were a lot of things that went around and happened. Ichigo shows up in a bit less than half of it. but it's the final arc. We're going to give a lot of characters a chance to
do
something. That's not too bad.
You know what I was thinking about? It was that he didn't do much of anything for the majority of the arc, so I kept making a joke that, you know, what's he doing? But
you
I guess
see a lot
still,
of him running
he's still
around.
Up. He still appeared. It's just he didn't really do much until, you know, he got the dual swords, and he didn't really do much for like another 30, 40 chapters until he showed back up.
Okay, so just to recap, Ichigo's in 88, Orihime's in 52, Chad's in 41, Rukia's in 46, Renji's in 57.
Okay.
How many chapters does Ishida show up in?
20.
Whoa. No, it's going to be more than that. I'd say 40.
I think 36.
Wow.
Shows up less than Chad.
In an arc about
in
the
quits. About the fuck it quits. What about Ryukin?
Like two?
Two.
Well, no, there's the flashback chapter,
the
so
flashback
I guess.
Flashback
like
chapter, so at least a solid.
Maybe like 10. But yeah, Ishida says he can't fight the Quincy, so he disappears for a while, but then he shows up on their side.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gone for like the majority of the bulk of the beginning of this arc. He's not there.
Has two moments where he proves his loyalty to all of them except Hashvault. One where he fires a bunch of arrows so that Ichigo has to run away. One where Ichigo starts fighting them after he's cut the Soul King, and he just kind of shoots some arrows at them again. And, like, one of them hits Ichigo in the shoulder, and the rest are just, like, he just shoots them so that no one else will attack them. And Gerard is just like, we can trust...
Your loyalty's been proven, boy.
Yes, newcomer, we can trust you. Yes, yes. It's like, that's it. Like, we never learn why Yuhupa kept him around. Ever. Like, why?
I've heard he was using him to kind of like lure Ichigo in or something, but it wasn't like, you know, when Uryu showed up on the enemy side, I'm like, okay, Kubo's not going to use the oldest trick in the book. Like, I'm a double agent. I'm really a good guy pretending to be a bad guy. I'm like, that's too cliche. There has to be another, there's going to be like a double cross of a double cross, multiple layers. Uryu's a pretty clever dude. There's going to be multiple layers to this shit. But no, it just turns out like, oh no, I was a good guy pretending to be a bad guy.
Well, here's the thing. I can understand that logic. I can understand Ryu join them so that he could kind of like learn their weaknesses and try
they
to take them out from the inside.
So.
But the thing that bothers me, and I actually have, I have like three things that I've picked out of the series that I'm like, the three things I wish the series had explained or like unanswered or kind of unresolved questions / plot lines. One of mine is Ryu and the Stern Ritter. There's never a moment where you really look and see why he's in the Stern Ritter or get an understanding for how he feels being in the Stern Ritter. He's with the Quincy's again. Like, his family. That he never at any point addresses what it's like to be with the Quincy again. For the longest time, he thought he was the last Quincy.
I know this is the most insignificant thing, but that really irks me that we never found out how he joined the Stern Ritter or how they approached him.
Like,
how would you respond to that? Like, you think you're the last Quincy's for your entire life, just you and your dad, and then, his grandfather died, and then these people show up and be like, oh, by the way, we're Quincy's now. Like, what the fuck?
And I get a lot of the Quincy's are freaks. Like, they're just a lot of crazy weirdos as a brain in a jar and a giant fucking hand. But there are some Stern Ritter that aren't just crazy weirdos. Like, you couldn't say that there's not a part of Chat or part of Uryu that's like, hey, this Baz B guy, like, I don't think he should die, necessarily. Like, I think, you know, maybe there's some value in this guy if he wasn't being led by a crazy madman. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, remember when Ichigo had that big hang-up at the start of the series where he learned that hollows were actually people?
Yeah.
So that if he was worried about killing them, until Ricky said, no, you just purify them.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, this is the first time he's fighting against, well, not the first time. This is the second time he's fighting against humans.
Yeah.
And he's got to kill them.
Yeah, we don't really know.
Ginjo and the Fourbringers, yeah. But then
he straight up killed Ginjo, yeah.
Yeah. Again, like, something that really should have been explored more. But he, you know, made sure to, like, pay respects to him. He, like, took his body back and gave him and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But then the rest of
them
is just like, He comes across what's his name? Sterner Sigma or whatever.
Chaz Domino, yeah.
He comes across Chaz Domino and he's like, I am Chaz Domino. My power is and just goes past him without thinking.
Oh man. I don't know. I think it was because the Sternritter are like, it's really screwy. I mean, I know they're humans because they're Quincy's, but it's really screwy how ages
Except
work.
Bonita.
Because, yeah, obviously. Because Basby is like 1,000 years old, but he's still like in his 20s. I'm like, all right. Same with Hashwolf. I'm like, okay, whatever. Just got to go with it, I guess. I nitpick a lot of shit, but, yeah.
I really. Because Ishida's explanation to Ichigo, like his cover story, is super lame too.
Yeah.
Because Ichigo's like,
"Oh yeah."
What are you? Ichigo says, "What are you doing on their side?" And Ishida says, "Because I am a Quincy." That's it.
Couldn't have come up with anything more clever there.
It's so much. Like, this is so easy. They killed my people. They killed my grandfather. I want to kill them.
And my mom.
I.
No. The Sterners killed his mom.
He could have fucking said the same goddamn line he did when he started the series. You know, my name is Ishida, I'm a Quincy, I hate Soul Reapers. He still hate Soul Reapers a lot. Like,
especially because he knows Mayuri.
Well, he started to become friends with them, but it's just that logic. He could still go with the same thing. You guys, we're kind of mortal enemies just from the fact that intrinsically the way we decide to fight Hollows is diametrically opposed. We eliminate them, you guys purify them.
I could quell that part of myself deep down after I met people like you, but then when I saw that my people were back and we could still fight and we could still win, that made me want to join them. So, it's so easy. You know, but Kubo's just like, he's a Quincy, of course he's joined them, and of course they believe him, because he's a Quincy. Why would they not trust him?
It's almost like Kubo is like, yeah, well, he's not really on their side, so he's just going to come up with this really bullshit reasoning. I'm like, Uryu's a pretty clever guy. I'm sure he could have come up with a more convincing lie to that to Ichigo. And it's Ichigo. It doesn't take a lot to convince me.
Uryu is well known for coming up with really shitty excuses, though. Like, he comes to the school all bandaged, like, what happened? I fell down the stairs.
He's not good when he's put on the spot like that. Yeah. It's like, why are you doing this, Ichigo?
Because it's Tuesday.
When he's first introduced to the Sternritter, and Yubak makes him Sternritter A and says he will be my successor, there is that explanation of, well, now that I've drawn that attention to him, everyone will pay attention to him, so he can't move freely.
Yes.
Okay, that's smart. That makes sense. But again, why did you let him join up in the first place? What do you have to gain from him being part of your alliance? Because Ishida contributes nothing to the invasion.
He doesn't
kill
anybody.
Imagine for a second if. Let's replace that moment with Kira, where Basby shows up in the cloud of smoke and burn her fingers and threw his arm off. Imagine if instead of that moment you have Renji rushing to the scene with a bunch of 6th Division people, and the cloud of smoke appears, and the smoke clears, and Ishida's there. Renji and Ishida had that moment where they fought with Xyloporo together, and they grew close, and they've known each other 3 Ichigo. And Renji sees him and he's like, Ishida? And an arrow sticks in his chest. Not enough to kill him or seriously wound him, but, you know, enough to take him off. What if Renji's going to use his Bankai because he's enraged after Asno to seemingly kill Byakuya, and instead of Master Masculine coming in and clotheslining him, Ishida shoots him with some arrows and puts him down.
Or Ishida steals his Bankai. That was what they were doing at the time. Quit making me sad
at things that never will happen.
You know, but like if he stops him before Renji uses Bankai, then, you know, Asno could be like, you know, why did you do that? And the real reason she does
this
to
better.
You know, the real reason she does is to prevent his Bankai from actually being stolen by someone else, but you can tell Asno, oh, you know, you were being attacked and I reacted instinctively. There's so many different ways you could play that.
Cocky dickhead.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know these are ideas that it's like I've had, you know, years of reacting to this to think of, but they're not particularly imaginative either.
No,
like,
they're not.
And Kubo literally did nothing with Ishida while he was with the Sternritter, except plan to destroy them.
Sometimes I'm reviewing this shit and I'm like, Kubo, just give me the fucking pen. Just let me. I can come up with something better. Just give me the pen. Trust me.
And then you draw stick figures and you're like, give it back, boy.
No, you can still draw it.
Good ideas.
you can still draw it. Leave the dialogue to me, though, please.
But that's the thing, and that's what kind of was so irritating about this arc, is that it's the Quincy arc. And it's a term that's so inherently specific to Uryu. He's the only other really Quincy. People say, oh, well, the Fullbringer arc was supposed to be Chad's arc, and Chad didn't do anything in it. I don't honestly care that much about it, because the Fullbringer was just another retcon to Chad's powers that really was an ultimately hollow situation. It meant nothing.
Hollow.
It's tough not to get that thing in it. But it meant nothing. But the Quincy's intrinsically are a story about Uryu, even if they didn't act like Quincy's or didn't seem to at all have the same philosophy that we've seen the Quincy's have before from what Uryu told it. They were still his family, and there was still nothing at all from Uryu's part in giving that more depth.
We find out more about their culture and their history a little bit. It's not really dived into too much. And yet, yeah, once again, Uryu only shows up, like, what'd you say, 36 times in the arc?
36.
Yeah.
For, 36.
For context, by the way, Mayuri shows up in 40.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Zaraki shows up in 44. And Shinsui. Now, those are the three most influential members of the Gotei 13 in that chapter.
True.
But they all show up more than Ishida does. The actual Quincy. You know also, by the way, I also counted the number of arms that were cut, burned, exploded, ripped, etc.
Damn, Nick, you had some free time this week.
You can't find this on Bleach Wikia, which is how I got lazy for those last three for Mayuri, Zaraki, and Shinsui. So I'm just going to search through the character appearances per chapter.
yeah, just do that.
Rest I actually did. But there are 21 instances of arms being ripped, cut off, and stuff. By the way, this does not include arm maiming, such as Pernita getting hit.
Did you include Pernita?
No, I didn't include any of the Pernita stuff. If I did, there would be more dismemberment than Ishida appearances in this arc.
Yeah.
So my qualifications were, okay, the entire hand or more has to be taken off, either by burning or by ripping or cutting or whatever.
So
I have 21 instances. Some were multiple arms, such as when Ione gets summoned by the Trace Bastias. That's three. When Renji gets his arms cut off by Yubak, that's two, etc. But 21 instances, I think, is a fair way of going about it.
Now,
I feel like we need to start pushing this towards its conclusion. So I want
to
pull...
I'm going to have to leave.
I should just throw this out there right now. I don't know if I'll be able to stick around for the rest of this because I have an early class tomorrow.
That's cool.
But
fulfilled your purpose.
I fulfilled my purpose as the Bleach expert, I guess.
I want to throw it out there because this is still a series that we all admit we enjoy. So I want to just say, like, we can take a moment. What are some of your favorite moments in Bleach?
Oh, okay. I'll go first. One of my favorite moments is the Ukiura's death. I think that I feel like that was one. I know, Nick. I felt like that was one of the few deaths. Well, one of the few deaths in the series to that period. But one of the few deaths that was actually executed right. And the reason why I feel that way is not necessarily because of the heart itself. That was weird. But it's when Ichigo his whole aspect of death was nihilism. It was nothingness. And right around the time he starts to maybe, like, he doesn't understand heart. He doesn't understand why people fight or love or any of that shit. And right when he just starts to understand a little bit what it is, like, he's like, I finally gathered a little bit of interest in you guys. It's like the exact opposite of his existence, and that's why he dies. Not really. He succumbs to his injuries from Hollow Ichigo, but that's the way I viewed it. It's like poetic, so that's the way I viewed that. Let's see. I also, the scene where Rukia is saved by Ichigo, the whole scene where he shows up in the Tendoken blocking the million Zanpakuto Firebird with a single one that was only a fraction of his power. That was a pretty cool scene, though. I remember that was one of the first few scenes I remember watching, like, as it was aired, like, on Adult Swim. And I love that scene. And the last one, this is a weird one, and there's more than three, obviously. But there was the fight between Uryu and Shirouchi, of all things, when Uryu pulled out Sele Schneider, and he's just like a total... I love
this
that.
This is
episode.
Also an arrow.
Oh, that is fucking pimp, and he's just like, yo, you're out of your ranged weapons, you can't beat me, and he's like, a Quincy's weapon is a bow and arrow, it's like a sword bow.
After he pulls it out, he's such a fucking boss.
He's so cool.
He's just like, the Quincy fights by absorbing Ryatsu. All your Reishi belongs to me now. And then Chirouchi's like sweating bullets, like, fuck you, die, Quincy! And he's just like, whatever, pshang! Severed her soul chain.
Got to do anything cool.
I severed her chain. She won't be having her powers anymore. Then he like spins it and then sheaves it and then just walks away like a fucking G.
Real quick, who's everyone's favorite character from Bleach?
Rukia.
Rukia.
I really, after rereading Bleach, I really, usually it was Chad, but I think I've really come to realize, oh, I fucking love
this. And you really like those guys who don't do anything.
Hey, he didn't do anything, so he didn't have a chance to, like, do something and majorly fuck up at it. So it's just Yeah. Every fight, he's had pretty shitty moments. Like, you know, he fights somebody and then immediately gets killed by somebody, gets taken out by somebody stronger. But, you know.
Unless they just fuck him up to begin with, like Yami did.
Yeah, Yami, yeah.
There should have been an Espada 11 that Chad could take out.
I have my three favorite moments here, then, from Bleach. Uryu defeating Metzer, Mayuri is one. Because it's
An
awesome moment. He, like, flicks off the glove restrainer, gains his full power, and just... I think it's the only time in the series Mayuri's like, oh, shit, for real. Like, he's, like... He doesn't have some bullshit recovery move to be like, whoop, I was planning that. Every other time in the series when somebody looks like they've got him, he's just like, oh, hold on, let me just get this solution to your problem.
Yeah, he gets straight up, like, beaten the shit by Uryu, and he's like, I'm going to use my full power, my Bankai, and Uryu even, like, cuts straight through that. So
it's
like,
such a fucking awesome moment.
Mayuri was up shit creek without a paddle on that one, but he still managed to turn into Jell-O and get away, of course.
Yeah. I have Chad when he reveals the left arm of the devil is such an awesome moment. Like, it's like the right arm was what for defense and the left arm is for attacking. It is El Directo, and it's just a giant fucking skull appears in the rock face behind him. It's again the last cool moment that Chad really has, but it is fucking awesome.
Totally was. La Muerte.
And this also, I guess, what doubles my favorite fight in the series, Kumamura versus Tosen. It was probably like the highlight for me of
Chris. Tosen versus Komura and the one who deals the finishing blow.
Whatever.
Hisagi. Can't forget Hisagi, even though the Gotei 13 spins the entire final arc just shitting on him for no reason. For no reason!
Gets the shit beat out of him by Driscoll, gets the shit beat out of him by Mask, gets the shit beat out of him by Lile.
And then, at the end, Kensei is like, you don't have a Bankai. You were doing his Bankai training with him! Fuck you, Captain!
But I do, I legitimately...
a zombie.
I really enjoyed Kuwamura versus Tosen. I thought those two had a really unique relationship within the Gotei 13, and it was one of the most interesting elements once Aizen revealed his betrayal to Sea, because they were friends, and they had a very close relationship. They both seem to respect each other on their grounds of justice, and they have this fight against one another. You know, Tosen like qualifies himself, finally like gains his bug form and vision, and the first thing he does is just start insulting the shit out of Kumamura.
Yeah.
Like, you ugly fucking monster, you're hideous. Is this what you always look like?
It's like, Tosen, clearly you're making that up. If you've never seen anything before, you don't know what looks good or bad.
he's just being a dick for no reason.
But it's like, it's sad, and Kumamura's like, it's fine, like, because you could never forgive the people that killed your wife, or your lover.
Your friend.
Yeah, you couldn't get over that, but I've already forgiven you. And thus, that's why I'm going to kill you. And ultimately, Kumamura isn't able to win. Hisagi comes in with that foul blow, but it's a sad, kind of bittersweetness, because Tosen's dying, and he's slowly starting to make peace with them. Like, he's kind of, like, accepting his loss. They're about to have a heart-to-heart. He's about to say something to Hisagi, and then Aizen just fucking evaporates him out of nowhere, which would have been cool if it wasn't something Aizen did, like, four other times throughout the series.
Looks like Haribo's gonna lose her fight.
Dude, I this is probably not what happened, but I read, like, a theory about that, and it's so depressing. It's like, that moment where he's lying on the ground and kind of like saying, I'm sorry for what I did, all of that was an illusion created by Aizen, and they were really just talking to him blood puddle the entire time. Isn't that fucked up?
That's totally like something he'd do.
Exactly! I'm like, oh my god, that's so sad. Like, they thought, oh, he's making amends on his deathbed. Oh, no, he actually just died.
But,
you know?
Yeah, it was a really cool relationship that the two of them shared. Like, of all the side characters in the Gotei 13, I really like them.
He never gave up on his friend. He always viewed him as a friend, and he can bring him back to the light in some way. Yeah. And then, of course, eventually when he fights against Bambietta and he becomes a dog, he's like, oh, so this is what same thing that happened with Tosen. I got absorbed by revenge because they killed Yamamoto, and now I become a mindless beast. And I'm like, no, Komamori, you're like, you're the closest thing to just like a lawful good guy in this entire
fucking series. You're the Davos of this series! The Davos!
It's okay. It's okay, guys. Iba will pick him up so that they can go fight Yubak and then never get there.
I like to think that Iba transformed the 7th Division into like a mobster hangout. And Komamori is still there as like their mascot, and he's just sitting up there on his throne like Komamori is just the dog sitting next to him, and he's just, that's what the 7th Division is
they
now.
They kind of fucked up. They start treating him like a dog. Like they pet him and treat him out of a dog dish. Like, yeah. No, I know you used to eat at a table with humans, this. But you ate out of a bowl on the floor now.
They give him the greatest dog, the best dog.
Nick.
Yeah.
Ichigo's fight with Byakuya. Ichigo's fight with Zaraki. The moment where Rukia shows back up in the human world after being away for a little while to punch Ichigo in the face and tell him to stop being a depressed asshole, which is advice he didn't take for the next 400 so chapters. What else? Orihime's moment where she gains her powers is really good, too.
Yeah.
Where she vows to protect Tatsuki and Chizuru. Because Tatsuki's protected her whole time that they've known each other. And then Tatsuki stops doing stuff. There's so many regrets.
Tatsuki.
Ichigo's early encounters with Zangetsu are some...
Oh, yeah.
Up until when he meets him when they're preparing to fight Zaraki, and Hollow Ichigo first shows up. There are meetings after that can go right to hell because Kubo kept on retconning him. But
yeah. Well,
a lot of the early moments. If I have to do some more recent ones, Renji versus Master Masculine gives me so much joy.
That was pretty good.
Because Master Masculine, because Master Masculine is being this complete over the top lunatic. He was like, "You are a villain. I must defeat the villain." And Renji's like, "I guess I am the villain. Fuck you."
My favorite part there is when Ego's Bankai breaks Mask's arm with his Bankai, and Mask is just like, okay, fuck justice, I'm just gonna beat the shit out of you because I feel like it.
And the last...
Mask was entertaining, I liked him, yeah.
When he uses the Snake King's ability in that form, where he grabs him the jaw and then clenches his fist in order to get the jaws to close, it's so cool. I guess I'll close up on Rukia's fight with Araniero. Satisfaction.
Yeah.
I know that was way more than three, but I couldn't narrow it down.
Hey, fuck.
Anyway, now for those people who said that I'm biased against Bleach, there you go.
Well, that's the thing. Like,
yeah.
I want to kind of get to our final thoughts on this, and I do have a real quick top 10 to do then.
Okay.
But, I wanted to kind of end this on a little bit of like a higher or like an appreciative note, because ultimately I don't think I've met anybody who really likes the ending of Bleach, so I don't think I'm really, you know.
There's gonna be one person put it on YouTube, like, oh my god, you guys.
Yeah. So I don't think I'm blowing anyone's mind when we crap on the ending of Bleach or like the last arc, but I do want to note, like, we all enjoyed Bleach. And I know that there are people out there who liked Bleach a lot more than I did. And a lot more than you did, Nick. And a lot more than even Tekken did. You know, there are people who legitimately think it's an amazing series all the way through. And I'm not going to say they're wrong or anything like that.
They message me constantly. I'm aware of their existence.
Tekken is the middle ground. Like, you know.
If I had a dime for how many times people have sent me Bleach theories about characters and what's going to happen with this character, I would have enough to buy a literal boat. Yeah. I mean, it sucks too, because I get so many and I'm like, I want to respond to this, but I get so many. It's just, I can't. But it's, people really care a lot about the series, I can tell you that. Mm.
But, I want to give Bleach a proper send off on this, because as you mentioned, Nick, this, and Tekken as well, this is something we've been talking about for 5 years. This has been a part of the recap since we started doing Weekly Manga Recap. You know, and series have left, you know, Naruto, Bakuman, Reborn, all those series have left. All those have ended. This is another piece of that gone. And I just want to kind of, like, you know, give it its fair due before we give it our final recommendation. So, ultimately speaking, can you guys recommend Bleach?
To some people.
I can.
I'm torn. I don't think I can recommend it as something to be like, oh, you'll just love it. Like, just like a series to recommend like that. Because even though it has a lot of good points, this last arc was awful. Like, I really did not enjoy it. And that's 2 years of the series, 2+ years. So I can't recommend it for that. However, at the same time, I feel like if you're into contemporary shonen, if you're into battle manga, it's almost required reading. Like, it's almost just something you have to read, you have to experience at least the early parts of it, just to see what it was all about, just to see what all the hype is about, or why people got into it the way they did. I think that is absolutely, like, almost required reading.
Yeah, I would recommend it with the warning. I would say once you get up to the time skip, right, when after the battle with Aizen, I would say read at your own risk, and just keep in mind that the rest of this series, Kubo's passion is not the same, so just keep in mind. And of course, I would give them the warning about, and the ending is not, it's horrible. So just keep that in mind.
Also, you might hate me after reading the end of the battle with Aizen, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have my problems with that too, but I've heard a lot of people saying it should have just ended at that point. I'm like, well, there were still a few mysteries left after that point, like with Isshin and everything, but.
Look at what we got instead.
Yeah, you gotta wonder.
You know,
okay, after Aizen, just read the backstory with Isshin, then you're good. Okay, now you're good.
I'm gonna throw this out there. I mean, Kubo didn't have to, like, structure the series the way that he did.
No.
The fight with Aizen was one long string of events that all went one right after the other. He could have done it, you know, the way, like, One Piece or Naruto or, well, the thing with Bleach is that I think it's sometimes too influenced by DBZ. Like, when you think about it, like, because, you know, when they went to Namek, like, well, they couldn't go anywhere else until they had defeated Frieza. They were kind of just,
right, yeah,
this had to be there. There was no time for asides because they're out there and they've got to defeat them. And it's the same way with a lot of Bleach chapters where it's like, well, we're over there now and we can't go back until we've defeated the final boss and thus they decide to go away.
Yeah, so. I never compared Bleach to DBZ too much. It does have similarities, but I always went straight to Yu Yu Hakusho with that.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I think that it's, I mean, it worked as a gateway series for me in a lot of ways. I think that, you know, especially for a certain age group, you know, I think that I think the teenagers could really get into it no matter what. I think that if you hang out at a Hot Topic, there you go. and I think that
own the Zangetsu umbrella.
And I think that if you read Shonen and Shonen, I think if you read Shonen combat action stuff and you go, I don't know, this is a little too goofy for me, this is a little too cartoonish and bright, then you could go for that, because it's got a slightly more mature and darker aesthetic to it. But my first, I don't think it's ever going to be my first go-to, was like, well, I want to get into manga. Okay, what do you like? Fighting. It's not going to be the very first one that I think of. Yeah. It'll be,
if you say fighting and swords, then yeah.
No, then I would say Rurouni and Kenshin.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you say like magic and superpowers and swords, then I've got, okay, I
yeah,
have
like,
to think.
Like fighting and ghosts and swords and black. I'm like, all right, D-Gray man.
So, a lot of it is just going to come down to taste, honestly. And, I don't know. I think I've got to do some more thinking about it, and I think that's honestly the last thing that I have to say about Bleach as it's ending is, I really don't know yet. Whereas, like, when Naruto ended, I felt like, okay, there were definitely some bad points, but I kind of know what I'm going to think about this now. And I think that really just comes with the way that the series lost popularity and got canceled early on, was people were kind of waning on it, and so my final opinion of it kind of waned on it a bit. And so I don't really know. You know, I think in a few years, I think I'll actually know how I feel about Bleach as a whole.
Okay.
All right.
It is, Chris.
I have...
This is the main attraction, by the way. This is why we're all here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I put together a top 10 list of the best Bleach chapter titles. I love Bleach chapter titles.
Oh, these are gonna...
Unironically, I love Bleach chapter titles. Because Kubo said he just writes them to sound cool. Like, he just writes them inspired off music, and they almost never make sense. The only caveat I'll put to this list, I didn't do any of the ones that were like, baby hold my hand, parentheses, part doggy bone fuckwad, or whatever. Like, the ones that are like 20 words long. I didn't do that. I went with the ones that are quick, hitting, awesome. All the ones that I'm like, I would name a band awesome, after this.
Awesome or weird?
Awesome or weird.
Okay.
Just my favorite. So, number 10, chapter 34, Quincy Archer hates you. Number 9. Okay.
We need to say it normal, and then I'll say it like a rock band from the 80s.
Quincy Archer hates you. Chapter 658, Fatal Matters Are Cold.
Fatal Matters Are Cold.
Nick, that's where you gotta come in, like you're Van Halen.
Yeah, you got the voice. Each one needs a different inflection.
Say it again, hang on.
Fatal Matters Are Cold.
Fatal Matters Are Cold.
Yeah. Now this one I have to yell, because you can't, when they're all in cap letters, you can't not do it. Number 8. Go. Chapter 563, Superstar Never Die! Number 7, chapter 215, Tug Your God Out! This one's solid, though.
Okay.
Chapter, number 6, chapter 462, Why Me Sad? Period.
I knew that was going to be on period. There! Yes!
The best part is that Kubo specifically always used proper lettering, like proper capitalization for all of his titles. Why Me Sad, beyond the initial W, everything's in lowercase, specifically with a period at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one.
It's gotta be like a Metallica, like, 90s kind of song, like, and that is Why Me Sad!
Oh, you're telling me you don't...
Remember.
You don't think Nickelback has a song like that out right now?
What am I saying?
You know what? I criticized him for that, because that was just when I was starting out, and people were like, he's Japanese, so yeah, his English grammar isn't that great. Like, then we find out he probably just did it
on purpose. Have you seen
exactly.
some of the stuff that Kubo's done with every language?
Exactly, yeah.
Number 5. Chapter 4. Why do you eat it?
It's like something you shout when somebody sings, like, oh, just don't mind me, I'm just having a liver
that does
sandwich.
Sound like, but that does sound like something a Japanese man would say. Why'd you eat it?
Number 4, chapter 120, Shake Hands with Grenades.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
That's the song where you don't actually include the song title in the lyrics.
Yeah, like, this is, like... It'd be like, I'm gonna rock you all night, in parentheses, shake hands with grenades.
I'm waiting for one more.
Number 3, chapter 310, Four Arms to Killing You.
Four Arms to Killing You.
That's a Death Clock song.
Oh, that's totally Death Clock right there.
Four
Arms to Killing You.
Number 2, chapter 294, If You Call Me Beast, Kill You Like Tempest. I don't know if the one you want's on here. Cause this
I hope it's number one.
I'll tell
just
you.
Just say it, just say it. Just go for it. Just go for it.
Number 1. Chapter -108, Turn Back the Pendulum. This is the greatest thing. Kubo fucked the entire numbering of his series. For an arm, -108 meant nothing to the flashback. Meant nothing. It didn't end on -100 either. It went to -97. And I firmly believe Kubo ended Bleach only in the rush he did because Jump gave him 700 chapters and he was at fucking like 680. He's like, I've got like 20 left. And they're like, no, you have 4 left because there's -14 chapters in this fucking series.
It's like,
and
oh,
you
shit,
forgot.
I forgot about that.
God.
Oh, good lord. That would have been hilarious. And he's just like, oh, you got to wrap this up in 5 chapters. Fuck, fuck, fuck. The one I wanted to be on there was Super Chunky from Hell.
I considered it, but I actually, in going through the old chapters, I realized there's another chapter called the Super Chunky. So I was like, it's a callback to that? I don't know.
Yeah, but Super Chunky from Hell, still, that could be a band
name. It's such a fucking awesome name. But once I looked into the negative 100, I get, the Buddhist angle, but it's just something that you look at, you're like, it's such an arbitrary number in the moment, though. It means nothing. Why did you... Yeah. You literally fucked the number of your series up.
Well, the one that I want to give a special mention to, and I agree it probably doesn't belong on your list, but... The one that I think does deserve to at least be brought up is bum 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 here, bum 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 fear, bum 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 here.
You know what?
Couldn't even go with the third word for it. Here, fear, here.
Here again.
It rhymes, Chris. Kind of. I keep mixing up your names. God damn it! I don't know why I keep doing that.
It honestly sounds like you're calling to a pet. Here, fear, here.
You know what? I'm gonna go with chapter 609. Just. A.
Fucking, I love Bleach so much. I'm gonna sincerely miss talking about on the recap. It was a fun series to bring up, even if we never enjoyed it so much.
I'm still gonna talk about it because people are that's what they expect from me. So I'll still be doing discussion videos every now and then for it. So you guys can come on my podcast that doesn't exist yet.
What a great invitation.
All right. Well, I think we're gonna have to do the fastest recap if we can to recap ever.
This fast. We've got about 30 minutes to do this.
Oh, so. If you're only gonna be on for another 30 minutes, I could stick around. But I thought, all right, if we're gonna do this for another hour and 20, I could stick around for that then.
I've got somewhere to be, so we're gonna go through this very quickly. Thankfully, we're already not doing our Jumpstart series. So we're gonna go with the recap portion, weekly manga recap, Black Clover. Page 75, the Kiten War, the invasion on whatever border it is of the Clover Kingdom they are by the Diamond Kingdom continues. We see their three generals in action, see what some of the stuff they can do. One of them has clay magic, one of them has lightning-based magic. And then as the clay guy is rushing in, suddenly Yuno blocks his way, and he uses wind magic to blow him the fuck apart. Then we get to see a little bit of how he interacts with Sylph. And Sylph is like, nobody likes you, but I do. Let's go on a date after this. It's like, main heroes in the series just can't have 9 girls fawning over them. It's impossible.
It's the gambit of combining shonen with a harem series. It's risky, but it's possible.
So that'll be
the end of Black Clover. It'll be a fight between Yuno's harem and Asta's harem.
Yes.
Asta gets excited from seeing Yuno in action. Yami says he's going to go and join the fight and help out the Clover Kingdom. And Asta's like, I want to come too, because I go everywhere. Every mission I go on. Every single one. I can't move my arms, but I want to go. And Yami's like, no. Your arms are broken. You can't defend yourself. It's going to be dangerous. Just sit this one out and watch through the viewing globe. But suddenly Charmy steps in and is like, I will go along as his senior and protect him.
She's really serious, too. Yeah. Yeah.
And that makes it all right, doesn't it? And he's like, huh. All right, I got no choice. Let's go, idiots. And Charmy goes, now I get to see my meal-saving prince!
I do like her logic, but it definitely is like, God damn, what's that? Asta's legitimately nothing but a hindrance right now, right? His arms are broken to shit.
He'll figure out a new sword. He'll put it in his mouth, pull Zoro off or something. He'll be fine.
When Asta did that, I was so happy when Yami just shut him the fuck down. I was like, no! Your arms are broken, you idiot! You can't use your magic! But then Charmy steps in and I'm like, oh, great. Asta's coming along. And then she uses her logic and so she acted really cool one instant just so that she could go see this guy she's got a crush on. It's like, you know what? Okay.
It's weird. I feel like this is the first time we've ever seen her drawn seriously.
That's so she can immediately go, ah!
I feel like she's a whole different appearance.
Exactly. Okay.
And then we close out on a bit with Langris, the Captain of the Golden Dawn. Langris and the Captain of the Golden Dawn, rather, talking. And The captain's like, let's make them regret barging into our country with their muddy boots. Jackie's there?
Jackie's there.
An okay gender.
Yeah,
gotta move on, I guess.
All right. I'm gonna speed rush this. I'm gonna get through Fairy Tail in under a minute. All right, I'm timing myself.
Oh, I wanted to do Fairy Tail. Crap, go for it.
Chapter 499. Gray and Luvia has a really weird suggestive opening. Gray and Luvia are connected by this chain. It's gonna kill them. They both are like, I don't want to fight each other, but we love each other. So Luvia's like, I can't let Gray kill me because it'll make him too sad. I can't kill him because I'd be too sad. So I'm gonna kill myself. Shocker. Double suicide. Gray has also killed himself. They've both impaled themselves. They're both going to die. That way, Invel doesn't win. And Invel's like, no, this is the only man who could possibly kill End, and that's what I wanted. And they're both dying there. But then Gray gets up, and he's rising. He's like, I'm filled with blood. Yuvia used blood magic to put her blood into him. I don't know how that stops the gaping hole in his chest, but it does keep Gray alive. He gets back up. He's super sad. He's like, oh, if you're only still alive, I'd pay attention to you. And then Invel's like walking away all sad, all like stoic and awesome. But then he's like, what's that behind me? And then it's great. He's like, rumble, rumble. And he's going to kill him because he killed Yuvia. Done.
Yeah, 3 seconds left.
Spoiler alert. Yuvia's probably not fucking dead.
No, what? Right. No, okay, she's super dead.
Guys. It's a sign. Okay? Bleach ends. Next week, Yuvia has a super obvious not death. Yuvia's dead, never coming back. I gotta do it. Like, it's a sign. Like, my running joke ends, another just like it occurs. Gotta happen. I actually kind of like parts of this chapter.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, but, you know.
Well, Yuvia has her whole, I like the thought of, it's not enough for me to just, you know, let Gray kill me, because then he'll be sad. So I have to kill myself. But then Gray does it too, and it's a bit of a weird gift of the Magi kind of thing, where they both think that because they're so determined not to kill each other.
I hate the bullshit whenever Invel's like, you know, this is my ultimate, I'm like the best ice wizard in existence, this is my ultimate magic, you can't break it, but you did through the power of love. Okay, you've done that before a shit ton of times, but whatever.
It just bothers me because it's such a horseshit contrived technique. Like, my power is to make a chain that connects around your neck and neither of you can escape it unless you kill one another. It's such a specific, drama-inducing horseshit ability that
this big two-page spread of Yuvia saying goodbye, but she'll always be with Gray-sama.
It's the same shit that happened with Godzilla and Levy and Wendy and Charla on their death chapters, I'm a little bit dubious, just a bit.
I'm like, I can see them doing this exact same thing on the next season of Arrow on the CW. Just the same kind of, like, we just need to contrive to put in some love romance thing into this.
I've heard, I don't watch the series, I've heard that turned to shit.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was kind of bad to start with.
Yeah, well, okay, I guess we...
There is also one bit that I like, also, where Gray thinks that Yuvia's dead, and he's begging her to open her eyes, and he's like, I promise I'll, like, you know, take your feelings more seriously and stuff. You know, just one of those kind of, he thought that he would have more time. You know, it was like, maybe he, you know, even if that was something that annoyed him and he was never going to take her seriously, you know, just saying, like, please, you know, you're my friend, and yeah, I'll pay more attention to your advances, you just please wake up. But yeah, and also, you know, getting the badass, oh, he's gone demonic because he's, you know, possessed by revenge and stuff. Cool moments that, in theory, that need more build up and context in order to really work, like Fairy Tail in a nutshell. So moving on to Food Wars.
Yes,
Shokuyaki no Soma, 180.
It's bear meat. All right, next chapter.
It is. Well, yeah. And also they separate all of the students up too. Like, even though Arina was told she could, like, watch over stuff, she's taken away, and then Megumi and Aldini are taken away. Apparently only Soma is taking on Hayama. That's weird. Are they gonna fight other members of the...
I guess so. I don't know how many resistance members they are, unless they were
there
just
There are
like,
more than 10.
Yeah, unless they were just like, just send all the fucking horseshit Polaris dorm members against Tsukasa and just watch them get crushed. Like, we don't need to waste time with that.
Dojima is going to oversee their competition, and he's a neutral observer, so he can be trusted. And they have to use bear meat, which Soma has never worked with before, and it's got this horrible smell to it, which means that Hayama will actually have an advantage because he knows so much about spice.
I really fucking want to eat bear meat. I really
and so Soma actually starts to panic because it's like, I don't have enough time to experiment with this. I've only got a couple of days. But then suddenly Kuga arrives with the Chinese Food Society, and they offer him all these different spices and ingredients. And he's like, here, you know, have this stuff.
I like the end. I think that's cool. Koga showing back up is a nice little touch. I really want to eat bear meat now. Like, I've never had it before, and just the idea, and I never considered it, but I'm like, just the idea, which is weird. I played a lot of Oregon Trail as a kid, but just the idea of fucking, like, eating a bear, like, eating something that in any other situation would be eating me is just like, I don't know, it's the ultimate, like, human power move where I'm just like, oh, fuck you, you're a sandwich now. Oh,
there was a,
I didn't do anything to take you down, and I'm eating you, and I'm gonna poop you out.
I believe there was a restaurant in California that tried to sell lion meat at one point, but they got sued over it.
Oh.
Wow.
Is it powerful? This is a decent chapter, just not a lot in it.
My Hero Academia?
Actually, okay. I really, really quickly want to just touch on Love Rush. It's super fast. The only thing I want to note, it's been kind of interesting, and this is one of the few times I've seen a romance series in Jump where the main character admits his feelings to the main love interest in the second chapter. Like, it's not... Unless they, like, knock her memory out or something like that, it's not going to be, like, a will-they-won't-they thing. It's just about her coming to grips with those feelings because she doesn't see him like that. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
A lot better than the first chapter, I thought.
I have no idea what this is. I'll check it out.
My Hero Academia, number 104, White Hot Battle, to each their own strengths. Such a manga title. The test continues. We get to see a bunch of the other school students demonstrate their abilities. There's a guy who has a power called Boomerang, where he can just decide on the trajectory of a projectile he throws, which I think is really cool. Jiro demonstrates...
Boomerang and Suicide Squad.
Jiro demonstrates her one of her finishing moves, which is Amplifier Jack. The device is on her wrist. She puts her ear jacks into, and she sends this shockwave through the ground. I want Jiro in this series so much more than
she
is.
She's such a great character. I don't know why. Like, so cool. Look, cool power. I just like her a lot.
Yeah.
Ashido uses...
I love the designs of those amps. Yeah.
That's a cool design.
Ashido makes, like, this acidy jelly wall. Tokoyami uses the ability that he was demonstrating before, and it's just called Black Abyss now, as opposed to, like, what was it, like, Full Darkness... Full Cloak Super or something.
It wasn't
like
that long. I remember commenting at the time. It was shorter than fucking Deku's goddamn ability.
Full Darkness Cloak or something.
It must have been longer in Japanese because it was not very
must
long.
Be English. Yeah, it was like four syllables, and this is three.
Yeah,
but he uses his ability to launch piercing Twilight Claws. Just try and like jam one of the balls into his opponent's target, and the one he goes after, she like shrinks her entire torso into her legs. Then we get to Shindo demonstrating his ability. Oh, Chris, you were right about his hands and shaking, but not in the way that you thought.
We don't know, Nick. He hasn't done his like little fucking biography of his quirk. There could still be like, he can make tremors in the ground. Also, if he touches your hand, you die.
Yeah.
Still be in
your heartbeat, your heart explodes.
Yeah.
He sends a massive shockwave through the ground. Vibrate. He can make anything he touches vibrate. However, depending on the intensity and speed of the vibrations, he can render himself immobile from the aftershocks. So yeah, if he shakes your hand, he can make you vibrate.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
But that sends us away from the main group for a bit, because it shakes everyone up and actually separates them all from each other as the ground is completely upheaved. And then we get... Oh god, what was this guy's name? The guy from Shiketsu? The one who was super enthusiastic.
It was, like, Shinomaru. Something like that. It was a longer name. I'm just baffled by this dude's fucking outfit. This is such a... It's so busy. This is the busiest outfit.
He looks like
he has armor on one arm and none on the other. It's, like, weird. Awesome. Like, asymmetrical.
He looks like a Bison went into a steampunk series.
Yeah.
Like, and also...
Like,
in
M. Bison is cosplaying as Captain Cold, but he refused to take off his M. Bison uniform.
he manages to sweep away this huge group's, all the balls that they're carrying, and sweep them up in this huge vortex with seemingly wind-based abilities. We don't get a power profile from him, but that seems to be what he's doing, because there's this
massive... That's way too fucking busy of an outfit just for wind-based powers. There's something else going on here.
Yeah, but he gives this big speech, which I really like. He's like, ah, you guys are so good with this hot-blooded battle! I freaking love it! Let me join your white-hot-blooded battle! Please and thank you! And just launches a huge barrage of the balls at them. Takes out 120 all at once. And he's like, all right, well, he's the first one in order to advance, I guess. Deku is separate from the entire rest of the group. He's like, okay, well, I've got to get up again from this. I'm getting really excited. And I'm really glad that I get to take on people with such amazing quirks. But suddenly, a girl from Shiketsu appears. I don't think that she ever actually said her name.
No, but, I don't think she did.
But yeah. She shows up just in the right in the space in front of Deku, manages to peg him in the target he's got on his chest. And she's like, yeah, you should be...
Shoulder?
You should be...
Yeah.
You know, she's like, you should be, you know, paying more attention. It's kind of weird. But also kind of cool. Mm. But Deku is surprised because she literally just appeared out of thin air right in front of him. So I guess we'll find out what she does next chapter. Exciting chapter. Liked it.
Seemed decent.
Oh, yeah.
One Piece.
I'll be it. Yep.
837. Luffy versus Cracker the General. Luffy fights Cracker the General, who kicks his ass.
He does.
At first.
Just, like, he uses his elephant gun. Cracker just blocks it, no problem. He just knocks him for a loop, sends him head over heels, tumbling into some trees. And a good chunk of the chapter is the other people present mocking Nami for thinking that Luffy could possibly stand against them. Because she's like, you know... other members from the worst generation, you know, have stood against us. Captain Kidd, Roar the Sea Apu, Beige the Gangster, Uroge the Mad Monk. Uroge managed to take out one of the four generals, sure, but man...
Which is so horseshit to me. He's the lamest member of the Supernovas, and he's the one who actually was able to slightly succeed here. Although... admittedly, we all know that Captain Kidd and Apu have, like, joined together, and Capone actually joined with them. But I'm like, a rogue? That fucking nerd!
It's like the commander accidentally stubbed his toe and fell down, and Uru just took the credit. Like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, like, I feel like he must have gotten the credit for something that didn't happen.
Brûlé tries to suck Nami into her mirror world, but Pound pounds her. And then Nami uses her climb attack to strike her with lightning and, defeats her briefly. So, good for Nami. Good for Nami.
She didn't seem like a really strong opponent anyway, just first, her power was kind of like,
Takedown on the island goes to Nami, though. Good job.
She escaped the mirror world. She's not done yet.
True.
Pound and Nami then have a brief conversation. Pound's like, okay, so you were friends with Lola, and Nami's like, yeah, now I know for sure that, you know, Lola is Charlotte's daughter because of the way that all the trees and such reacted to Charlotte. We cut back over to Luffy again, who is still not doing too well. Cracker mocks him some more, says, like, there's nothing you can do. You know, you come over here, you're going to take back your beloved comrade. You selfishly claim that you will take back your friend rather than allowing him to be happy. When his annoying former captain gets to him, that proud prince will no doubt say, "Be gone from my sight, you miserable inferior pirate!" And Luffy gets really fucking pissed off and muscles up and uses his Kong gun and breaks through Cracker's shield immediately and leaves him spitting out blood and tumbling across the ground. And groaning in pain. And Luffy says, "Don't insult Sanji! Even if he's too happy to want to come back, he would never speak to us like that."
I pretty much knew right off the bat he would have to go Gear 4th on this guy, because this is probably supposed to be like one of the top tier members of the Big Mom Pirates, but yeah.
What bothers me is I was listening to Shonen Jump podcast, that Cracker is the Minister of Biscuits. I thought it meant Minister of Biscuits, like how we consider it. Apparently, it's the English perception of biscuits. So he's actually the Minister cookies. Of, like, cookies.
Right.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
pisses me the fuck off. Oda, I'll put up with a lot of horse shit. I'm not going to have you start favoring the Europeans and their horseshit naming conventions over us.
Them damn Brits.
Yeah, if there's like a clothes-based empire and a Minister of Pants shows up and it's not about full-length pants but actually underwear, I'm going to flip right the fuck out.
Fuck it, Chris. We're going back to war with Britain.
Yeah.
They're the first enemy. They're going to be the last.
This is my hill I'm dying on, Nick.
Florida okay. wasn't involved in this, Nick. Don't worry about it. This is a Pennsylvanian thing.
Yeah. Us PA people. We're very specific about our biscuits.
Promised Neverland, Chapter 4, The Best Option. Get a lot of character development in this chapter.
By the way, Promised Neverland is now officially
I'm absolutely loving it.
Ray gets brought into the fold by Emma and Norman, and I really like the dynamic that they set up with these three. It reflects what was set up in the first chapter where, you know, Emma was the most athletic, Ray was the most thoughtful and least active, and Norman was a balance between the two of them. Because we have Ray being the most pessimistic of them, saying, like, we have to save ourselves because if we try and save everyone, there's no way that we can actually get away. All of us will just die. And Emma's like, but I want to save everyone. I want everyone to escape. And Ray's, you know, lectures are like, look, we can't just escape. Consider what's going on. We don't know what's going on outside of this whole place. What awaits us outside is a demon's world. There's no place for humans to live in the worst case scenario, so it's impossible. If we take everyone with us, we will all die. We have to leave them behind. And Emma just goes, no!
No! Too much of an optimist.
Yeah. And Norman agrees with Emma, and Ray takes him off to talk to him about it. He's like, look, can you make her see reason? She'll listen to you. She won't listen to me. And Norman's like, look, when Emma cried after what happened, you know, she, you know, I was scared of dying. Emma was scared of her family dying. She is amazing. Think about, you know, everyone else. And Ray's like, but if it's just three of us, we have a chance. And I was like, it doesn't matter. We've, you know, she won't go along with it. I want to protect her. And the only way that she'll go along is if we save everyone. And Ray's like, so why are you doing this? And I was like, because I care about her. I want her to be happy. You know, it's not enough to just save her life. She's got to be happy, and the only way she'll be happy is if we save everyone. So Ray finally is just like, okay, let's do it.
Quick translation issue. In the version I read, it said that Norman loved her. Mm. Or does it say in that version that it just said it, like he cares about her?
I think it's cares. I think they're too young to really start delving into love at this point. They're like 12. It seems like a weird thing to really throw in there.
It's possible he's got some sort of attraction to her. I guess it would have to do with, it probably said Daisuke, you know, along those lines.
Yeah.
Which can mean a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. We'll see shortly enough, I guess, if Norman does have strong feelings like that for Emma. But I guess we'll see. But yeah, the chapter ends with Ray basically saying, like, okay, you go, yeah, here, check this out. This is the newest book that we've got. It's 2015. That was 30 years ago, it turns out. So, at the very least, it's been at most 30 years since there was a human society outside of these walls. So we know at least that much, but we've got to know more. We've got to know more about the outside. We've got to know more about what we're up against. And then we've got to come up with what we're going to do. If we're going to do this, we're going to win. Cool moment.
Yeah.
Toriko.
No time for Red Sprite this week, guys. We're already going to have to blaze through Toriko like it's fucking going out of style.
Devour Toriko. Devour it.
We get another Acacia is a douchebag moment. That's the main highlight.
Turns out Acacia never really loved her. He did appreciate her macking on him, but didn't really give a fuck. Froge died, but managed to eat the full course.
Says in the most sexist way possible.
He was a whore. Yeah, he was a sexist.
Didn't matter how many girls I went out and banged, she would always be there waiting for me, playing kisses on me, and treat me to the best cooking when I came home. She knew what she had to do, barefoot and pregnant after I in the kitchen. Damn.
He's a real
Amidora. He's just trying to make Acacia out to be the biggest dick ever, basically.
Amidora goes, fuck you!
Yeah, it's worth noting, though, that they explain what Joe essentially is. Froge came back, ate the full course menu, changed genders with pears, so Froge is a man. Or Joe is a man, rather. and she was pregnant at the time, had the kid. They don't know who the kid is. The red herring, I would assume, is Toriko and Star June. I've heard some people theorize Komatsu, though, which would be interesting. Yes, good luck.
Yeah.
But yeah, Midoriya gets fucking pissed off at the end and is pretty
and
awesome.
He just attacks him, yeah.
And one of whatever Blue Nitro was is trying to betray Acacia now that he's been...
Oh, well, that's Pear. That's Pear.
World Trigger! World Trigger!
World Trigger!
It is chapter 155, OG Squad. Some really cool moments in this chapter. Mm-hmm. I really like this chapter. It's essentially boils down to the pursuit. Since OG Squad split up to go after the two different snipers, OG's gone after Yukama Squad Sniper, the other one is going after Chika, and she's running away from him. So Osamu's like, okay, we've got to meet up, and he was like, should I go help Chika? And she's like, no, we can't do that. I'll go meet up with Chika, you go north, and I've set up wires there so you'll have the advantage when you're fighting. So Kashio is the guy who's going after Chika, pursuing her, launches a bunch of bullets, but he can't get to her. She's also trying to use the lead bullet meteor. And he remembers what Oji was telling them during their stay, which was, okay, all you've really got to do is make it so that she can't possibly fire, and make it so that she can't possibly block, because you've got to activate the main and sub-triggers at the same time whenever you're doing lead-based bullet attacks. So that means that she can't block while she's doing that. So if you just keep on attacking her, she can't use the lead bullet to counter you. So Kashu just has to keep on going after her while she's using a shield to block. And all she can do is use her stubby little legs to run away. But eventually, there comes this moment where suddenly she does this little hop while she's running away. And Kashu's like, oh shit! And he pulls to a stop. And I forget what the sniper's commenting his name is. He goes, huh, that was clever. She indicated that there just might be a wire there, despite jumping. And Kashio is whirling his sword around. He's like, there's no wire. What the fuck? Goes after her again, launches a bunch of bullets, but Osamu is there just in time, blocks him with his shield. Chika is able to get a chance to finally summon her lead bullet meteor, bombards Kashio with it, a bunch strike his leg. Osamu rushes in with his thruster. Chika shields him with her shield as he charges in and cuts the guy down. So cool.
A badass teamwork effort there. Like, those two together, like, holy shit, this is a monster team, except when they are probably going to go up against anyone really good. They might get fucked
then.
But
yeah, yeah.
In this moment, they are unstoppable.
That entire six-page sequence from the moment that Chika just gives that little jump just to faint him out up until Osamu arrives and together they take him down.
Incredibly done.
That's the full chapter for me. Like, I don't even need to talk.
If I read this series, that would be badass.
It is. I highly recommend you give it a read. This is a great chapter.
Give it a shot.
We actually end on Yuma being wounded as the other sniper hits him in the hand, which indicates that OG has abandoned going after him because he's going after Osamu and Chika instead. So that's where we're going to close off heading into next week. But yeah. Liked it.
Yes. It was a very, very good chapter, and they looked awesome in it.
All right. Let's close out. We got to do MVTs. MVPs and MVPs. Favorite series this week. I'm going to go with World Trigger because I really like that sequence.
I will let our guest go.
I guess I'll go with My Hero Academia this week, yeah.
I wonder why. Couldn't go with Bleach, because Bleach isn't in the magazine anymore.
I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with me reviewing it in the future. Maybe. I hope next chapter's really good and has a lot of things I can talk about. I don't know why.
I also, Series of the Week is World Trigger. It was so great. I considered the Red Sprite, actually, because I really enjoyed the first chapter of that, but we'll probably talk about it more next week, but World Trigger was my chapter this week.
And World Trigger won our audience poll pretty decisively. Yes, got like a third of the vote.
I saw that, and I'm like, damn, something cool must have happened in that.
Pity I don't read it. My MVP is actually going to be Charmy from Black Clover.
I would not have called that.
I don't know, no particular character. I mean, okay, there was the guy in My Hero Academy, obviously, but I can't remember his name right now. But honestly, like, I think that her part in that chapter is the only part I really enjoy. Even though it's just like a joke we've seen before, I don't know, it really stuck with me and I thought it was really funny.
Okay, I'll go with Ray from Promised Neverland.
Oh, okay.
He really brought it all together, like, okay, you guys escaping all out of here, you're being way too optimistic, there's no way in hell that's gonna happen, so, yeah.
It was a full introduction to his character.
That's a great thing about this series, is that they're trying to escape, and everything that you can come up with, like, well, maybe this will happen, maybe this will happen, that's something that they think about, too. You know, they look at, like, every single angle, and they really analyze it. It's not like you're watching a horror movie, and it's like, oh, well, they forgot about this, or they're not doing this. It's like, no, they're being as logical as they can about this, and Ray really brought that to the table. He's like the stern reality of the situation. You can't really, yeah.
I considered giving it to Midora again, because I thought he was actually really awesome beating the shit out of Akasha at the end, but I gave it ultimately to Osamu, because dude got a point. He looked fucking cool doing it. If I can give it, like, a duo to the Osamu Chika, I will, but even though Chika was more important in that scenario, I love Osamu, and I need him to get more moments to shine, so it's going to him.
Blatant favoritism on this
point. You can quote it here now. When the end of the year comes around and you're, like, tallying all the results from this, you're like, wow,
look,
Chris,
at all these Osamus.
Osamu was the number one for you, and it's like, yeah, because he fucking, like, gave it to him on weeks where there were even better characters in World Trigger to give it to.
Also, side note, that guy from My Hero Academia was Inasa Yoroshi. Yorashi? Or something like that?
Yoroshi.
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
So, there you go.
All right. Let's finish this up. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this edition of Weekly Manga Recap. We tend to record the show weekdays? Not every weekday, though. It takes too much time. Hitbox.tv/RoloT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We had to start a bit late in order to accommodate all of our schedules this time. In order to stay updated on that stuff, if there is a change, either on the streaming site or at the time, you can follow us on Twitter. I am Y Ruler of Time, he is RoloT, and we are WMR Podcast. And you can, of course, also follow Tekking at Tekking101, where he makes announcements on when his videos come out.
Yes, indeed.
Go check out his new My Hero Academia reviews, which
and,
is
Chris,
out right
you
now.
Ruined it! It was supposed to be a secret!
I was
protecting it so well!
I was laying out subtle secrets!
Yes, I'll be reviewing My Hero Academia in the next chapter. Maybe tomorrow or Friday it'll be out. I'm really pumped, so yeah, look forward to that. Okay.
Episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, on youtube.com/weeklymangarecap. And on iTunes, where you can leave a comment or rating and help us be the woodworking podcast.
We were, at the start of this podcast, we were number 55 on the Hobby Podcast Top 100 list. We've dropped to 61. Obviously, it's because we didn't talk about Bleach enough. But, guys, I can't stress it enough. If you're able to leave a 5-star review, leave a comment on the feed, you know, grab the podcast off there. It really does help the algorithm and helps us get promoted up there, and that can do a lot for the show. So if you're able to, we greatly appreciate it. Thank you for everybody who does. I know I'm still trying to find out a way that I can view the UK store to make sure all those guys over there and their fucking biscuits get their fair shake for any comment they make.
Biscuits!
Send your criticism. Ask us questions, suggest stuff for us to read, to watch for our movie commentaries, and all that stuff. Send them to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks, of course, go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of fun bonus content for you guys to enjoy, like the trivia contest that we did with Tekking a few weeks ago. That did gangbusters, and we had a lot of fun doing it. So thank you so much, guys.
Make sure to check out. Special thanks, by the way, to some new patrons. We have Philip Pham, Richard Omhofer? I tried.
One of those might work.
Kenneth Smith, Austin Ashlock, Robert, and Karuru. Thank you very much to all of you for supporting Weekly Manga Recap. It is greatly appreciated. Fist bump.
And, of course, thanks to the guys who help make the show what it is, especially visually. Infamous Planet and Steve Man are responsible for pretty much everything you see on the screen right now but our faces.
Actually, Steve Mann owns the trademark right on my face, so
I'm
responsible for that now, too.
Okay, so
technically Marvel and Disney own the Captain America you see behind me there. So.
Yeah, and I got, I got One Piece, Helsing back here, yeah.
PlayStation on your shirt, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that too, yeah.
And, of course, right. Steve Mann, Tarkin artist, did the freaky picture.
As Steve Mann does, he picked his favorite character from the series and drew in a pinup.
I love this man already.
Steve Mann is great.
I think he's going to be like, can I get that picture?
I've already screen capped it a while back. But yeah, okay.
You can download a full version on his Patreon, patreon.com/Steve Mann.
That's going to do it, everyone. We'll have Pokemon Adventure, the Gold and Silver chapter, well, Gold and Silver and Crystal, I should say, chapters it's coming out soon.
It should be next week. I should be ready for next week.
Cool.
At which point, Nick, we're going to have to start getting ready for the big one. Yeah. Fuck Blogist. Fuck Bleach and its 15-year history.
It's going to be Septimer gear.
Fucking, I'm going to hate them. You're going to see me fall into the biggest spiral of depression. You're just gonna see tweets that are gonna make no sense. They're just gonna be clearly like me drunkenly being like, this is fucking garbage! Why? Why do bubbles cut steel?
That's gonna be coming soon. The countdown begins now. Thank you, Tekking, for joining us.
Yeah, yes. No problem. Anytime, man. Thank of course, you. I can't be on it anymore because, you know, my whole life and existence is now.
But we're never going to talk about My Hero Academia on the yeah. podcast. Never.
It's going to, unless it fails miserably. I don't know. We'll see. What do you think is going to be the next series that's going to get the axe? I'm thinking Toriko.
It's probably the next big series that's going to end is probably going to be Toriko.
Toriko or Fairy Tail. I don't think Fairy Tail is too much longer going forward either.
Yeah, well, we would all.
Considering the pace it moves at, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
I think what we should do, because we can't obviously have you on for My Hero, but I think we'll have you on as a World Trigger consultant / expert. We'll bring you on to talk about all your favorite things that happened in the recent chapter.
I did that with Anissa
can be our new Bleach expert.
Yeah, we'll bring Anissa on. She'll talk about what she really enjoyed about Bleach this week.
I did do a joke review of that one time with Hunter. I had no idea what's going on, but here you go. There's this weird guy with a tattoo on his head, and he's doing shit.
All right. We're going to have to head out, guys.
Yep. So. Have a good one.
Yeah, if we stay any longer, you're just going to see a Nick-shaped cloud of dust and his chair spinning.